This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Paid in Full by Chelsea Cameron. Narrated by Aidan Snow and Kendall Taylor. Prologue. Gentry. Hawkins. Callahan whispers my name with his eyes wide as we get the communication in our earbuds that we will cross the threshold into a room with two children and a female before we reach our target. The look is wide-eyed, and it's an automatic tell that he is drowning in the fear. Frogmen don't hesitate, I remind him, just as our team breaches the doorway. It gets you killed. Callahan is new to the team. Young buck, just from Buds, and on his first small unit mission. I remember my first. A drug bust on a Colombian cartel. It doesn't compare to the shit we see over here, though. The sandbox isn't some childhood fun. No, this place is dry, gritty, and leaves a bad fucking taste in your mouth. Get in, get out, and hope like fuck you don't lose a limb or end up on a plane back to the States in a wooden box. On a hustle, we file in. There are only four of us on this intel team. We each have our individual skill set we bring to the table, making up one hell of a team. Since we are SEALs, things are slightly different than the regular Navy. While most military personnel use last names, we do that, but we also earn our team name. Shifty, whose last name is Moser, is always our driver and translator. He shifts gears in our ride, and the fucker can cuss you out in 12 languages. Daniels goes by Slim because there is a slim chance any of us could kick his ass in hand-to-hand combat. Daniels is also our team leader. Callahan doesn't have a team name yet, although if I had to give him one right now, it would be Rabbit. He's bouncing around like there's a bunny for him to pounce on. They call me Rock, because I am solid, heavy to handle, and hard. My job this mission is backup and babysitter to Callahan. The powers that be consider this a simplified procedure with no additional personnel necessary. This is a quick mission to procure answers from a shark in a sea of piranhas to get the information we need on a whale. The bigger the fish, the larger the risk. Shifty translates to the Iraqi family in front of us, telling them we are here for Akram Malid. The woman wails as the kids point their fingers in gun shapes and pretend to fire at us. Hate. The air is thick with it. Stifling. These kids don't know shit about life, death, or war. All they know is a group of Americans geared up with weapons just rushed into their living room asking for their dad. Children, generally speaking, aren't born to see race, religion, sex, or hate. They are taught it. Honestly, we could be on their side and wear a red, white, and blue shirt, being an American of any kind. Their automatic little reaction would be the same, until someone told them we were friendly. That is life over here. Much like the things many Muslims in America face, it doesn't matter if they agree with what people of their religion are doing. They find themselves stereotyped. It pisses me off. America, land of the free because of the brave. I am one of the brave, but even I get disgusted by the things that happen in my home country. Just because I am in the military doesn't mean I support what goes on in Washington. I follow orders. That's my job. It's all out of my control. Just like this situation. I search the kid's eyes. What I'm looking for, I don't know. Maybe I want to see some sliver of hope we are somehow on their side, or they are searching for some trust. We're not on their side, though. Fuck no. There is nothing friendly about us and what we do. This is a mission. One we will execute regardless of the casualties. These kids should be scared. They aren't. In fact, if they had a weapon turned on us, they would use it without hesitation. Knowing this, I study them harder. That has me on high alert. The missions no one can know about, the war before the war, we do it. The United States Navy SEALs, the elite, the ones who run straight into danger and chaos, all to help people who either don't care for help, or, like tonight, to gather information to help the higher-ups sort out what we do next. Fuck yeah, it's me, badass of the badasses. Shifty spouts off in their native language that we want him, only him, and then we're out. The woman doesn't speak, just continues to cry out as if we are causing her physical pain, even though not a single one of us has touched her. The dramatics aren't typical of women in their culture. No, if we were an Iraqi official, she would simply stand to the side and allow us access without a word. This is a play, a ploy. She is warning her man to get out and trying to pull on our emotions. She should know. We don't have any. These people, they play on our weaknesses. They use any antics, including women and children, to feed their end goal. She could strip down right now with a bomb to her belly and not one of us would be fazed. What is crazy is so many people over here will strap those bombs on with the intention to hit the switch and detonate the explosives, knowing they will die. In their culture, it makes them a martyr. They think they will shake us. It doesn't. We can't be rattled. Our lives, our team, and our country depend on our ability to be ever steady. Callahan is focused on the two children as I make my advance deeper into the home. Ignoring the woman, the noises, and the smell of spices from their dinner, I move in. A man emerges from the hallway before I can get to the bedroom. He's obviously gotten his warning from her wails. I need to search him, but the area is too narrow to do so safely. "Hands up," I order, and he complies easily. Too easily. His eyes. They hold so much evil. They flash in defiance. He is playing a game. One I hope he understands he will lose. Casually, the man in front of me moves slowly out into the open room. Again, he's too calm. It's all too calm, which only makes the hair on my arm stand up. There is this flicker, this unintentional blinking he's doing that tells me this man is thinking, and thinking hard. As soon as I get him into open space securely and give the nod, Callahan will pat him down. Until then, I keep my gun trained on him. One shot, one kill. I will take him out without hesitation. This man is a leader of a terrorist cell that is growing every day. He has created a cyber world that bases him in the United States, while he resides in the safety of his own country. War-torn or not, he is safe because he chooses to be against Americans. With his cronies in place, he is like a puppet master controlling them as they meet in libraries using our own public facilities back in the States as a base to give out orders via the internet our tax dollars provide. Video conferences spoken in code have been deconstructed and their plans revealed. "This fucker is cool as a cucumber for a man who could die tonight," Slim says to all of us as the man moves into the communal space with his family. To this, Malid laughs. "You American fucks." Shifty looks to Malid from the woman who is suddenly silent. Guess we don't need to translate his native tongue. The sweat trickles down my face. My eyes burn, but I don't dare blink. In the space of the hallway, I couldn't check him for weapons. Callahan steps forward, away from the kids, to pat down Malid. I step to the side, keeping my weapon trained on Malid. We're all prepared for him to be armed. It's a matter of when he will react. Then it happens. He moves his arm, Callahan moves back, putting himself closer to the kids and space between him and Malid. We wait. The rules of engagement, law of war, law of armed conflict, they are ingrained in our brains. Our mission was clear. Our command is to stand down unless fired upon. We cannot simply shoot this man without cause. Seconds are like hours when preparing to engage. Just like that, Malid pulls a gun from his back. Put the weapon down, I order as I move to stand in front of the two children. Callahan moves with me, putting himself closer to the kids, and I take two steps to the left where I can grab the kids if necessary, but my gun remains steady on Malid. The woman stands silent to the side, closer to Shifty and Slim. Callahan looks to the kids and puts himself in an awkward position, as it seems he is trying to protect them from Malid. I don't have time to correct him. We're here to talk, Shifty says, not lowering his weapon from the woman. Intel. We just want answers. It's a lie. We don't want to talk here. Our orders are to pick him up and remove him from the home. At our camp, he will get interrogated until he breaks. He won't simply return home like Shifty is willing to let him think. Malid is smart. He probably knows what he's up against. We know Malid is tied to a bigger terrorist unit, one that is planning an even bigger takedown of two American military bases. Malid's unit has targeted two government facilities that also house some essential Department of Defense personnel used in intelligence warfare. The parent cell that's over Malid, however, they plan an all-out assault on Norfolk, Virginia's naval base and Camp Lejeune, North Carolina's Marine Corps base. Both are training operations, and crucial to war response for our country. While taking out Malid and his cell is important, gathering the information on who is on the inside for the base takedowns is mission critical.
Don't we all want answers? Malid counters. For example, why was the sky not blue today, but rather slightly gray?
Cocky fucker. My finger is twitching to pull the trigger, but I remain ever steady. It's what we are trained to do. Everything is about our training.
Go with us peacefully, answer the questions, and you'll be back home tomorrow. Your woman, your kids will be safe,
Shifty tells the man who aims the gun at my teammate.
And what happens if I don't comply with the almighty American forces that have broken into my home?
That's when the ugly comes out.
We kill your woman. We kill your kids. We kill you.
Slim spouts off, knowing damn well we will do what we have to do. Slim spoke the truth, not some idle threat. This is the really hard part of my job. We do whatever is necessary to procure the information, and, like they will use their women and children as weapons against us, we will use them right back. Then, somehow, we're expected to push that shit down, swallow it all, and face our own families as if we didn't just tear apart someone else's.
You would kill my woman? Malid asks with a sickening smirk.
My gut churns, reading the evil in this man.
Whatever the fuck it takes,
Shifty says, keeping his gun trained on the woman who shows absolutely no emotion. In a flash, Malid turns the gun and fires. His wife screeches just before her blood splatters Shifty's face. The smaller of the two children cries out before his older brother squeezes his knee, silencing him.
You have no power over me,
Malid roars as we all react.
Fucking kill all them.
I fire. Callahan fires. Slim fires. Shifty fires. The noise is deafening. The pops, the heat. It's sensory overload. Malid hits the floor in a thump, blood pouring out of him. A smile on his sick face.
Don't do it,
Slim yells as the older of the two boys pulls out a pistol from under the pillow in front of him. The boy doesn't listen. He fires. Callahan cries out when a bullet hits his leg. His gun goes off. Shifty fires, shooting the kid holding the small pistol before he can land another round in our teammate. I blink. So much blood. This little boy's blood. The same little boy that shot my brother in arms in the leg now lays lifelessly on the floor at my feet with his blood splatter saturating my fatigues. The communication links click in my ear. Shifty gives an update. We were ordered out immediately. Leaving the other child in a home with three dead bodies, we give Callahan a quick check to see if he can move out. I lift him up and half carry him out. No man left behind. Before we can be rushed by any of Malid's associates, we retreat back to our base camp. Only we don't leave this mission feeling accomplished. We leave with blood on our clothes, questions in our mind, and scars on our souls. Chapter 1. Gentry. The hotel is a dive. This is typical for us. When I got out of the Navy, life was chaos. I had spent years being told where to live, what to do, when to eat, and sometimes even when to shit, shave, and shower. After a mission went bad, there was this piece of me that didn't fit anymore. I couldn't do my job. Not safely for a team, anyway. Missions had gone bad before. This wasn't the first. This one left me as the lone survivor, and that just shook me to the core. I was lost. I was broken. I was damaged. The only calm I could find was hitting the open road on my Harley. Eventually, I met up with Collector, X, Judge, and Rowdy. Together, we became our own band of brothers. The devil seemed to be calling us together. In a short time, the Devil's Due Motorcycle Club was born. We were getting some ink in Alabama from Old Dog Earl when Trapper landed his bloody body on Old Dog's doorstep. We haven't been able to shake him off since. Not that we would want to, even though sometimes he is an absolute prick to handle. Six nomads. Six nobodies with no place to call home. One road we take together. One life we live dedicated to righting the wrongs of the pasts we each left behind. My past is one they can't help me solve. Nope, the devil will not get his due with me. The United States government let me down and cost the lives of my entire SEAL team. When assigned to a team, you don't often change. You bond with these men. Of course, there are the ones like Callahan, Sean Callahan, who go out on their first mission, get injured, and get out. The life of a frogman wasn't for him, after all. I get it. But for me, it was everything. If that isn't bad enough, every politician involved sleeps comfortably at night without a second thought to the ramifications of their bad judgment. It weighs on your soul, and the reality is, less than 1% of the American population even remotely understand what you feel, what you saw, and the demons that haunt you every moment of every fucking day. I can't go a single day without thinking of the bad decisions that cost the lives of 7 of my brothers in arms. I don't sleep well at night. Not any night. It's why every morning by 0400 I am out running, chasing my demons away. Training comes in handy that way. From buds to missions, my body became a fine-tuned machine, a weapon. I can function on 4 hours of sleep or less a night. Anything over that, I feel like a zombie. Get through tonight, ride out tomorrow. There is one thing I find myself looking forward to in recent months. Tempest fucking Adams. She is dynamite in disguise. I'm the fire to light her up and watch her explode. If I'm a lucky fucker, I'll be balls deep inside Tempest Adams before dinner, Then I plan to eat that pussy for my dessert. And it will be the best fucking dessert I have tasted in my wasted fucked up life. Damn, she gets me twisted. I look at the cheap sheets pitching a tent from my hard cock just thinking about her. Turning to my side, I ignore the ache in my balls. Release will come within an hour of seeing her. Until then, I can hold out so that sliding in deep will be finding heaven in the midst of hell, a mix of soft heat. I'll consider it my mission. Closing my eyes, my mind drifts back to that first taste. She is fucking beautiful. Her long brown hair lays against her creamy skin as I lay over her. Tempest lifts her chin as she arches her back under me, creating more contact. Deacon, she moans as I slide my fingers through her pussy lips, feeling her throb for more contact. You are beautiful, I whisper as I pull my fingers from her body and sit back to rest on my knees. Lifting my fingers to my lips, I slide them in my mouth. Her essence hits my tongue and the taste explodes. She's a little tangy, a little salty, and a little sweet. Removing my fingers with a loud smack of my lips, I land my hand on each of her legs. Gripping behind her knees, I lift them up to bending and spread her wide in front of me. Like a starved, depraved animal, I dive in. Lapping, licking, sucking, I plunder her pussy with my mouth. The more she rocks into my face, fucking me, the harder my cock gets. I feel my pre-cum leak from the tip as she clamps her pussy muscles around my tongue and releases her juices on my face. Hell fucking yes. Waking to the noise of trappers screaming, I jolt to an upright position. Licking my lips, I can almost taste Tempest again. Looking to the full-sized bed beside me, I see a sight we've all seen before. Trapper is face down in the bed, twisting, thrashing, and crying out as if he's in pain. Instincts always push me to want to wake him, but I know better. Last time he went through this and I woke him, the fucker came up with a knife from under his pillow and pressed it to my neck, ready to slice. No. Lesson learned. This will pass and he will go back to snoring. It takes a few moments before Trapper settles. Eventually, without waking up, he rolls from his face-down position to his back where the snoring begins. Like every other night, it takes exactly 12 minutes from the time he stops screaming to when he starts to jack off. From there, only after his release when he finds himself covered in jizz, will he wake up, shower, and then pace the room. Like usual, it happens. While he showers, I have a dreamless, light sleep. At 0350, I wake to find him going back and forth like he's trying to wear a hole into the cheap-ass carpet. Blowing out a breath, I sit up and slide out of bed. "You ever gonna sleep in clothes?" Trapper asks, like he does every time we share a room together. "Skivvies are restricting. My cock likes to breathe. Move aside, fucker, I gotta hit the head and take a leak." I joke with him as I pass to the bathroom, which habit from my active duty time has me always calling it the head. "Deacon, you ever get head while in the head?" Trapper asks me from the other side of the bathroom door. He finds some smart-ass remark to tie to my military service every chance he can. It's Trapper. Mitchell Trapper Gates is a man who chases death, relishes the day he will no longer be here. Some people would say he's an adrenaline junkie. I know better. With my contacts, I sought out Trapper's past when his bloody body landed on the doorstep in front of us. We may be a bunch of badass motherfuckers, but when it comes down to it, the six of us are good men, including Trapper. I know Trapper's past. I know all about Avery, Avery's family life, and more. I don't share. If Trapper wanted everyone to know his shit, he would share it. He doesn't. Well then, I'll take it to the grave. The thing about Trapper is, we can run and not say a word. He gets lost in his own headspace as I do mine. It works. It's still dark outside when we hit the gravel. Starting out northbound, we fall in stride. I am tall as a tree, and Trapper, well, he's not. At almost 7 feet tall, I am a beast. My body build is lean muscle mass, and my demeanor is fearless, while my running partner is around 5 feet 8 inches. He is cut, built, and ready to die, which makes him dangerous in a whole different way. An hour passes while Trapper keeps up. My thighs burn from the pace. I relish the feeling. Anything that gets my blood pumping reminds me I am alive. Everyone else is dead. But I came out of the last mission breathing. I may be dead inside, but my body is still pressing on. Sweat now rolls down my face in beads, and my lungs sting with every intake of air. Yes, this is the shit I need. My dick gets hard. Press on, Frogman, I tell myself. Push harder, run faster. I roar my frustration in life while lifting my hands up and giving the middle finger to the sky, the demons and the angels alike. Fuck them all. Uh-oh, the Navy SEAL is about to break, Trapper says as he moves away from me. I'll never fucking break, I yell more to Karma, God, or whoever the hell can hear me. Trapper laughs. You need a slap on the ass or an attaboy? One day, Trapper, I'm gonna kick your ass. He then rushes over, smacks my ass, before taking off on a full-blown sprint, all while yelling out to me, Promises, promises, sailor boy! I find myself laughing out loud as I press on to catch up to the twisted fuck in front of me. This is the Devil's Due, MC. The six of us just fit together.
Chapter 2. Things I would tell my 15-year-old self, now that I'm grown. Don't settle. Donna. Tempest. My cup overflows. That's what the mug in front of me says. I swirl the tea bag while the steam rolls off the top. Before I can even take the first sip of my breakfast steep, my computer pings and pings again, 4 times over alerting me to new emails. This is Monday. I swirl my mouse on the Haven's Harbor anchor-shaped mouse pad. The monitor in front of me comes to life. Email 1, subject line. Haven's Harbor Charity 5K details inside. Email 2, subject line. Ms. Adams feature opportunity available. Email 3, subject line. Regarding Erica's participation in the protest. I stop, forgetting to even look at the other email, and click. Ms. Adams, I am writing to you today to make you aware of Erica's participation in a protest at our school. Last week, the faculty were notified of a potential protest on a project required in 10th grade U.S. history. We took it as a rumor and not something that would actually happen. However, wanting to be diverse, we did, as a history team, come up additional option to the project to best suit the needs of the children disagreeing with the assigned task. While the majority of students understood the expectations of the project, we also know there were a few who felt the project was inappropriate and planned to boycott the project altogether. The students were informed that an alternate project could be provided should they have a moral issue with the first project. All they needed to do was ask, so we would be aware of who would be doing which assignment. You know we strive for diversity, and to make sure we meet all the needs of every student here. The majority of our student body completed their journal on the great cultural divides in history. The expectation of each student was to make a journal as a repressed person in each decade of history. The purpose in this project was to drive the students to empathize with individuals who faced adversity in our history, therefore paving the way to life as the students know it today. it has been brought to our attention that Erica was the student orchestrating the protest. We offered an optional project based on your daughter's emotional stance that our journal was glorifying sexism, racism, and forcing the children to mentally be suppressed like the individuals in history. Therefore, it was Erica's responsibility to turn in her report, a journal giving thanks, rather than forcing her into the mindset of their time period. We thought to say thank you to the many people in history who have opened doors and paved the pathway to allow students today to have a benchmark and platform in which to debate a project, but still learn those key points in history. Erica did not do this report. In fact, this morning as she arrived at school, she lined the hallway in front of my classroom all the way down with students holding a chain. She attempted to turn in some papers, but given she disregarded the assignment as a whole, I refused them. Her act of defiance has her spending the week with Mr. Dunn in in-school suspension. I feel that we need to schedule a parent-teacher conference together to better understand how we can help Erica to understand the importance of this particular project. This project is one-third of her overall grade in my class, to which she will be given a 0 for her lack of participation, an outright refusal to follow instructions. The suspension is for her disruption of educational opportunities for the other students. Please reply with a date and time that works for you, and I will make sure I am available. Thank you. Mrs. Starling, Academy of Arts High School, History Team Lead Teacher. Damn it, Erica, I say, lifting the receiver of the phone on my desk. Dialing the school, I feel the emotions overwhelm me. Take her, Tempest, Stephanie says with tears falling down her face. The papers are in the bag. She's yours, Tempest. Be her haven, because I can't. Stephanie, come with me. I beg of my best friend. I will help you. I'll keep you safe, her safe, and the two of you together. You'll be a better, smarter mother than I ever can. Take her, Tempest, and give her the safety I can't. What do I know about raising a baby girl? She will test you, Tempest, but you are strong. Stephanie kisses her baby's head one last time before placing the small bundle in my arms. Raise my baby girl to be stronger than her mama. Raise her to fight for what she believes in, Tempest. I hang up the phone as the tears fall hot down my cheeks. Damn it, Stephanie, I can't do this. I'm messing her up, I shout out before looking to the ceiling. I know there are no answers. I know Stephanie can't magically appear. In the end, you can come back from a lot of things in life, but death isn't one of them. Why does this have to be so hard? Stephanie was supposed to raise her daughter, only he found her before she could safely have Erica and escape. The plan when my best friend found out she was pregnant was to run away before the baby was born. He was in the military, the Navy to be exact, and he was away more than he was home. They weren't married. The plan should have worked. Except it all went to hell when he came home early and found out Stephanie was indeed pregnant. Little baby Erica Haven Adams. Yes, Stephanie gave her my last name and had my name put on the birth certificate. 5 pounds, 1 ounce, 18 precious inches long, and born 3 weeks premature because her dad beat the hell out of her mother, sending her into labor. Stephanie spoke with a social worker at the hospital within hours of giving birth. With her assistance, she was able to get papers drawn up giving me custody of baby Erica before I even knew what she was doing. And what's worse, to this day, I don't even know how legal all of this is, except the birth certificate makes it seem like Erica came from my body and Stephanie never existed. It kills me, but after what he did to her, I can understand. The buzzer goes off before I can get myself together from the onslaught of emotions. I press the button on the box. Yeah, I clip out. The school is online too for you, Tempest, Cameron Lynn says through the intercom. They say you called and hung up before they could answer. Blowing out an exasperating breath, I pick up the phone receiver. This is Tempest Adams, I answer. Hi, Ms. Adams. This is Dixie from Academy of Arts High School. My apologies for missing your call. I didn't get switched over fast enough. I hung up. It's not your fault, Dixie. Can you please tell Mrs. Starling I received the email and I am available for a conference tomorrow afternoon at 3?
Yes, ma'am, I sure will.
We hang up and I slump in my chair.
The memories invade while I fight to push them back.
He's gonna kill me, Tempest, Stephanie says, looking down at the pregnancy test in front of her.
God, what have I gotten myself into?
Maybe this'll be the change he needs. She looks at me with fear in her eyes.
He's not the same since he deployed on that mission.
Come on, Sean Callahan is the last person you have to worry about. Sean and Stephanie have been this match made in heaven since they started dating our freshman year of high school. Stephanie was the perfect Navy girlfriend. She has been supportive, even when he decided to become a SEAL.
He came home. And Tempest,
she looks around like a shadow may find her.
Tempest, he's not the same. He snapped. If I don't do things right, he hurts me.
I gasp. Shock. Humiliation. Fear. All the feelings wash over me like it was just yesterday when my best friend told me her longtime boyfriend was abusing her. I was stunned and then embarrassed that I pushed aside what she was going through. Then the fear hit, and it's gripped my heart ever since. Stephanie is gone. Sean is in a military prison somewhere for killing her. Manslaughter was his charge and conviction, but murder is what I call it. Erica is all that is left of something that was once so good, that turned so bad. That's love, though. A fairy tale that rarely has a happily ever after. Yeah, I'm fine on my own. Now, if I could only be so confident that I can tackle parenthood solo, then we would be in business. I have 5 hours until my teenager will be home, and I have to sort out an appropriate punishment for her defiance, even though I can understand where she's coming from. Nothing in life worth having ever comes easy.
Chapter 3. Gentry. The ride is a blur. The closer we get to Haven's Harbor, the harder my dick gets. Damn, I have it bad for this woman. When we pull in and park, Collector and Sonny give a wave before they take off down the road to the hotel we normally crash at while we are visiting. This isn't our first stop at Haven's Harbor, and it won't be our last. Judge grew up next door to Tempest's cousin. He's always sent money supporting the facility. Once on the road, he met a woman and her son who were in a bad situation. He called in a marker to Tempest, so Sabrina and little Danny would have a place to go. They're all doing well here. Everyone who comes here, Tempest keeps safe and gets them back on their feet. I admire her dedication. She is this woman that is the whole fucking package. Only with Tempest, she is so busy caring for everyone else, she can't see that life just passes her by. Just thinking about her makes me crave her. She's the only person who has ever pulled me in. I know loss. I just don't know love. Could I have that with her? Judge and his woman, Tamalyn, want to take Tempest out to dinner tonight. Luckily for me, that is 3 hours from now. While we are here, they want to check on Sabrina and Danny. They will first see them rather than interrupt Tempest's work day. Me, on the other hand, I have every intention on being a distraction to her Monday afternoon. X and his woman Hadley are going to spend their time with Cameron Lynn and her son Brennan. Hadley and Cameron survived life on the streets together in New Orleans. Cameron has settled in here well, and even works at the front desk for Tempest. Coming here saved her life, and her son's. Everything seems to come full circle back to this place and old dog shop in Alabama. While they play catch-up, Trapper will do whatever it is he does. Rowdy turned off a few miles back to have some alone time with his wife, Michelle. He told us he knows of a flower shop not far from here that keeps peonies year-round. He wants to give his woman her favorite flower. Things are changing for all of us. Rowdy has already said when we get back to Lead, Alabama, this life isn't for him anymore. He wants to settle down with Michelle. They want to do the family thing. If I were him, I would be the same way. After everything they've been through, I get it. Sonny, collector's woman, is ready to get back to her business. After Old Dog was killed, because some sick fuck worked for him and was protecting his brother, the tattoo shop was left to Sonny. She's had someone running it while we've been away, but she misses the art. There's no doubt when we leave Haven's Harbor this time, the Devil's Due MC will never be the same again. Can we all find a way to settle down? Not me. I just don't know that I could build the same kind of life they are in Alabama. Not that it's a bad place, but I don't know if I can face being in the same place day in and day out. The open road is my escape from the past that chases me. And yet, when I am away, Haven's Harbor is always on my mind. It's always pulling me back somehow. Rowdy and Michelle, I see it. The house, the picket fence, two kids and a dog, maybe even a cat. I can see it for them. Collector and Sonny, too. Hadley and X have never known a comfortable life, but the kind of love and relationship they have, I can see them settling down without a problem, too. Judge and Tamlin, well, as close as Tamlin and Tempest are, they may not leave here when the time comes to say goodbye. And I wouldn't be surprised. Where does that leave me? I'm not settling down with Trapper, that's for damn sure. I would love to say there is family in my future, but I just don't feel it. I can't explain it. Maybe it's fear. It's something I want, but there's a part of me that's not sure how to make it happen. My childhood wasn't terrible, but it wasn't something they write books about either. If I had a kid of my own, I would be afraid I would mess him up. At a fast clip, I walk inside Haven's Harbor and straight to Tempest's office. Cameron Lynn smiles big as I pass by without a word. Yeah, it's rude as fuck, but I'm a man on a mission, and my cock is leading the way. Shutting the door behind me, I watch as Tempest's face goes from surprise and fear to a sly grin. I close the space between us. Tempest stands, wearing a navy blue dress that flows loosely around her small frame with some sexy as fuck red heels. Reaching her, I grab her behind the neck before crashing my lips to hers. As her mouth opens, I fucking take, yes, I take her with my tongue. She whimpers as her tongue hits mine. With my free hand, I drop it straight to the globes of her ass and squeeze. Fuck yes. This right here, my mind clears as she presses her body into me. Her hands fumble, fighting to get my belt undone. When she finally frees my cock, she jerks her mouth away while stroking me. My balls tighten and I almost blow my load from her touch. Seeing her desk chair close by, I move us to it. With my ass planted in her spot, she stands in front of me. I bite her tit through the fabric of her dress and bra while sliding my hands up her legs. Her skin is soft. The noises from the lobby are drowned out by my need, this carnal desire to be joined with Tempest. I locked the door as soon as I came in, so now is my chance to get lost in her. Finding her panties, I quickly pull, snapping the sides and yanking them off. Lifting the silk garment to my face, I inhale, smelling her tangy scent. My fingers plunder, teasing her pussy while she grips me, stroking hard and fast. She wants this too. Always does. She is wet. When she comes closer, I drop the panties and grip behind her knees, pulling her over me, straddling my body and the chair. Reaching between us, she lines my cock up with her entrance and slides me in her, inch by inch. I hold my breath as her body stretches to accommodate my size.
God,
Tempest moans.
Godzilla.
She whimpers when she seats herself, covering me completely. I laugh. Godzilla?
Your cock. Godzilla. It's a beast,
she says as she begins to ride me. I lean in, pressing my lips to hers, silencing the chatter. I don't talk. It's not my thing, but fucking... Oh yeah, I can fuck. Gripping under her thighs, I lift Tempest as I also thrust up, making sure she feels every millimeter of me inside her. The walls of her pussy clamp down like a vice grip, trying to hold me in place. Tempest rests her hands on my shoulders to find her balance as I work us both up. The chair creaks under us, and I don't stop. Breaking away from our kiss, I catch my breath as my body seems to feel every single touch of her body to mine.
Don't stop, Deacon,
she cries out my road name and I quicken the pace. She moans inaudibly as her pussy tightens and her stomach clenches and she soars over the edge. My balls throb, but I fight the urge to come. Tempest drops her head to my neck where she places soft kisses behind my ear.
Deacon,
she whispers.
It's good to have you here.
Slowly, I rock in and out of her as the aftershocks work through her. Good to be here, beautiful, I tell her honestly, feeling like I am home for the first time in my entire life. The tingle in my spine tells me I can't hold off much longer. Tempest lifts her head, looks me in the eyes, and in a raspy voice tells me,
I've missed you.
When her lips hit mine, sealing us together, I lift her up and slide out just as my cum shoots out onto the floor, the chair, and both of us. Only when I'm spent does Tempest stop kissing me and rest her head on my forehead.
Damn, Deacon. You know how to say hello.
I laugh. Godzilla knows how to make an entrance. I look around her body, pulling her close to me and loving the feeling of her body against mine. And a mess. He knows how to make a mess. She laughs against me, and it's heaven to my ears.
I love that I can make you lose control, Deacon.
You say that until you gotta change your dress. We both laugh. I'll be happy to help you change. I wink, and she relaxes against me again. This is peace. This is happiness. This is home, sweet motherfucking home.
Chapter 4 Things I would tell my 15-year-old self now that I'm grown. Guard your health. Trish. Tempest.
Mom, I can't believe you won't hear me out. This is the kind of injustice that Project was projecting on us. Erica waves her hands wildly, with her dark hair in a messy bun on top of her head bobbing around. All through history, unless you were an upper-class white man entitled to the world, you had to stifle your feelings, your talents, and do as told. Well, when does history remain history? When do we call to action and be the change? Erica practically screeches at me. I don't know what to say. I don't disagree with her points, but responsibility and all the right things to do mean I can't let her get by with this act of disobedience. She was given a task, and in life, we will be given jobs we don't agree with, but we have to do. I thought getting her through her first period was hard, but no. Her finding her way and becoming her own woman is going to put me in an early grave.
When I get a chance to, this is another one to add to her journal. Hold on to your sass and fire, but know when to tame the flame. I have this journal for her. Lots of journals, actually. I have been doing them since she was born. It's a collection of notes that I would tell my teenage self if I could turn back time and know what I know now. I also have each woman who comes into Haven's Harbor add to the journal, even though they don't know what I plan to use it for. I see it as a way to give her different perspectives. When she is 18 and ready to face life on her own, I plan to give them to her. If we both survive that long, sometimes parenting feels like a war zone that no one can prepare you for. Do you know why we have to learn history? I ask her, trying to find a common ground rather than continuing to wade through this teenage battleground I've found myself in. Because some person went to college to get their piece of paper, since they spent all that money for the degree, we gotta let them ramble on and on about the inequalities and injustices of the past. They also use this as a power play. I raise my eyebrows at the tiny powerhouse of a young woman in front of me. Power play? Yes, power play. I swear, Mom, it's like all my teachers have some Napoleon complex. You know the saying, when all else fails, teach. I raise my hand up, silencing her. Now, you wait 1 minute. I can understand not wanting to write a journal, putting yourself in a mindset of a slave. I don't agree with your actions, but I also understand that for your generation, you don't care to learn history. I blow out a breath. My frustration is winning, and I'm fighting not to raise my voice as I continue. You will not stand in this home and disrespect your teachers. I don't know what your problem is, but get over it. Those people sacrifice their time, talents, and yes, their education to teach you. You entitled teenagers, lessons that you will use in the future. I have to catch my breath because I really want to cuss her up one side and down the other for the blatant disregard for her teachers she has. Do you know why women's liberation is so crucial? Do you know why some slaves fought in the Civil War for the South? Erica shakes her head at me, but doesn't seem to be backing down at all. If we hadn't had these women in history who were fearless, we wouldn't have the right to work, vote, and own anything. Our complete identities as women would be based on the social economic class of the man we managed to marry. Do you know why some slaves fought for the South? Fear of the unknown. See, two different repressions, two different time periods, and two completely different reactions. What's it got to do with me? I throw my hands up in the air and pace the living room. Erica Haven Adams, you are ridiculous right now. You. I raised you better than this. You know what? This is a project you need to do. Yes, you need to learn some empathy for others. You need to understand the past so we don't repeat history in the future. You need to understand people come from all walks in life and will react to things differently. I protested the project, Mom. You can't make me do it now. How would that look to my friends? Plus, I turned in my project and I stand behind it. Break the chains. You can't. You simply can't make me do their version. Oh, but I can and I will. I want your phone on the counter. You're grounded until I see this project completed. I look her in the eye. As for your friends, any friend of value would see the lesson being taught in this project and tell you to put your big girl panties on and deal. Erica is the one to throw her hands up in frustration now. I've already been given a zero. Mrs. Starling is not about to give me a grade, so why are you wasting my time doing this assignment? Break the chains, Mom. That's what I'm trying to do here. Break the chains of the past by moving on from it. Why are you going to make me do a 180? And then it happens. In a blink, I say the words I never thought I would ever say. I'm your mother, and I said so. That's when the world shifts. Yes, the entire world tilts. Her eyes go cold in front of me. Her father's eyes blend with her mother's cheekbones and nose, while she balls up her fists
and presses them down at her sides. You're not my mom. You're just the lady I got left with. Two sentences, and all is lost. I fight back the tears. I will not let her see she's broken me. No, that's a power I won't give the teenage diva in front of me. For the first time, I question my decision to be so open with Erica in the first place. There has not been a time where I haven't been upfront with her, about where she came from. I left out that her dad killed her mom, but she knows her mom. Every single great memory I had with Stephanie, I have shared over and over with Erica. When she asks, I am honest and say, she was killed. I don't get into the details because she's never asked for more. Then again, she's never thrown this up in my face before either. This is hell. Erica Haven Adams, you are my child in every way that counts. You will set your phone down on that counter, go to your room, and do your project. What you won't do is attack me with your words. She glares with venom in her stare as she stomps to the kitchen countertop to put up her phone. As she stomps past me to go to her room, she mutters the crushing blow. The truth hurts. Only when I hear the slamming of her door do I slump into my chair and let the tears fall. I told Stephanie I couldn't do this. Here we are 15 years later, and I've failed my best friend. My phone rings from its place in my purse. I ignore it. After a shit morning, a surprising afternoon with Deacon, this is how my day is going to end. No, there is no one on the other side of that phone that needs my attention more than I need to take care of myself right now. When I started Haven's Harbor 15 years ago, I did so with my college fund. I called my mom 2 days after I went home with Erica and told her everything. She supported me 100%, knowing that her own sister lived in an abusive relationship. She gave me access to the money that was supposed to be for my education to start my safe house. I remember we would visit my aunt and cousin, Tamalyn in South Carolina. Everything always had to be a secret. Knowing all the times my aunt called my mom late at night, I watched the pain she went through being helpless to save her sister. I promised myself and my mom, when I got the place up and running, we would be a place for Tamalyn, her mom, and Stephanie. It was my mission to save them. Except doing this all with a newborn baby took a lot more than I imagined. I didn't save Tamalyn's mom. I didn't save Stephanie. In fact, Sean Callahan went on a mission 2 days after Stephanie gave birth. Since he was off sulking somewhere for beating her, he didn't even know she had the baby. He left after she pretended to be knocked out. She then drove herself to the hospital. He never called to check on her. She was in the hospital recovering when he called, not to see how she was doing, but to tell her he was called on another mission and would be gone. When he returned 8 weeks later, Stephanie called me and hid the phone in a couch cushion. I close my eyes and it comes back like it was just yesterday. "Where's the bastard baby, Steph?" Sean yells at her. I hear the smack of him hitting her. "I lost the baby," Stephanie lies with her voice cracking. "Do you know who I am? Do you know what I do? You lying cunt. I can tell you're lying. Did you give it to the real dad?"
"Sean, I've never had sex with anyone but you. Please, calm down. These missions, they are too much for you. We lost our baby. Stillborn."
"Slut. Don't you talk about my missions. Don't you say a fucking word. I'm here to kill that baby. Yes, cunt, I'm gonna kill your baby. Just tell me where the fucking brat is."
I hear Stephanie sobbing. "Please, Sean, let's talk. You've been drinking. We have lost our baby. We need to comfort each other, not tear each other apart."
I choke on my emotions, listening to her try to soothe the maniac in her house. The sounds change, and it's like they are kissing.
"I love you, Stephanie.
take the pain away. The little boy shot me, baby. I was gonna kill him. You know what that does? I would have pulled the trigger. If he wasn't already dead, I would have killed that boy who shot me.
He pauses, and fear runs through me listening to him.
I would have killed the boy and not felt bad about it.
Tell me. Talk to me, Sean, Stephanie pleads.
Let me get lost in you, Steph.
Those were the last words I ever heard her say. Stephanie Marie Hargett died that night from asphyxiation. According to reports, Sean and Stephanie were having sex in their bedroom when she begged him to choke her. He did, and got so lost in the sensation because she didn't use their safe word. She died since she gave no indication she wanted him to stop. He killed her. I don't believe it was their kinky lifestyle because they weren't kinky. Not like that, anyway. I even gave a statement to what I heard and knew about them. Purposely. I left out the baby I had as my own was, in fact, their child. He was a veteran with PTSD. No one wanted to tarnish his reputation anymore by saying he had malicious intent to the grieving mother of his stillborn child. It was all swept under the rug, just like the missions. Turns out, Sean wasn't leaving on missions like Stephanie thought. No, he only made it through the first mission where he took a bullet to the leg. After that, he was going to different clinics dealing with veterans' affairs to get out of his contract with the Navy. Layers and layers of lies all stacked on top of each other. All I could do was hold on to Erica and the memories of my best friend. The regrets burn deep. They always will, I imagine. I was young and didn't think everything through. I should have called the police while I listened to them fighting. I should have done a welfare check. I should have done more. At some point, I fall asleep still in my clothes from work in the chair. I wake up around 2 a.m. As I pass by Erica's room to go to bed, I open the door to give her a soft kiss on the head while she sleeps. No matter how much she may hate me right now, I love her with everything I am. Moving in the dark, I find her bed, and my heart drops when I find it empty, and her bedroom window wide open. She's gone. Everything I have ever done is for her, and she's gone in the night. Once again, I've failed my friend and my daughter.
Chapter 5. Gentry. Ambush! The word comes through on our communication link. It's Slim. He's 2 clicks ahead of me. The entire unit is ahead of me. I am the tail. We're moving in to surround a compound and disengage the weapons production they had set up. It's supposed to be a quick in and out. In fact, the commander doesn't think we'll see any action at all. We're going in on a stagger for less chance of detection. Typically, the front few engage in the action and the tail is cleanup, if anything at all. At 2 clicks up, Slim is a little over a mile, not quite a mile and a half in front of me. Even on a hustle, it will take me approximately 8 minutes to reach him, given the terrain. I'm hit! He cries out as I can hear the shots being fired in the distance. Engage! I say, trying to call out to the team members closer to him. One by one, though, I listen as I try to close in. And one by one, my brothers are hit. I reach the space, firing at any enemy in front of me. Pain sears my leg as I take the first bullet. We're outnumbered. I can hear the helicopter in the distance. The steady sound of the chopper is almost a lullaby as I take another bullet to the arm, trying to get to Slim. I reach him and drag him back out of the exposed area. Then I go back in for Shifty. One by one, I try to get my wounded teammates together for the chopper to get us the fuck out. Everything goes dark when the next burning pain cuts into my neck. I jolt up in the darkness of my room, covered in sweat. 3 bullets it took before I blacked out from blood loss. When I woke up, I was in a hospital and given the news. I was the only survivor from my unit. I received a medal and commendation for getting all my brothers out of harm's way. They also quickly determined I was no longer mentally fit for duty. In a flash, my career went from thriving to medical retirement. I was still alive, though, which is more than I can say for my team. Slim, Jonathan Daniels, died before I got to him, along with Edward Rosie Rosenbaum, Beau Jangles Frimo, Shifty Andrew Moser, died at the hospital, as well as Colin Madman Kirk and Hector Gonzo Gonzalez. Glenn Finger Snyder lasted a week before the infection. The pain and the loss was too much, and he took his own life. There is no worse feeling than doing your best and it not being enough. The lone survivor. I would rather have died beside my brothers. I still haven't come to terms with it. 4 years have gone by, and I still can't move beyond it. I don't think I ever will. Before I can shake off the bad feelings from my nightmare, my phone rings from its spot on the nightstand plugged in. Judge calling, displays on the screen. I answer it while looking at the clock to see it's 0210. What the hell, Judge? Get dressed and get to Tempest's house now. He clicks off, and I jump into action. I'm the first to arrive, and I don't bother waiting for anyone else or to find out what's going on. My heart is beating wildly in my chest, and I have to remember, as a seal, I must remain calm. Tempest opens the door and looks up wide-eyed at me. She is shaken. She fights back tears.
I wasn't expecting you, Deacon.
I can hear the other bikes in the distance. Cavalry is coming, beautiful. Her eyes are puffy from crying, her hair is sticking out everywhere, and she is in the romper she put on after our office rendezvous this afternoon. She hasn't gone to bed. Someone hurt you, Tempest? She shakes her head. Then what's going on? She doesn't answer as Tamlin pushes past me and rushes Tempest.
We're gonna find her. Judge and the devils do, Tempe. We'll find Erica and bring her home.
Who exactly is Erica? I ask, wondering if there is some dramatic side to Tempest that would wake everyone up in the middle of the night for a dog I didn't know about. Yeah, we've been hooking up for a while. I even call pretty regularly. In all the conversations, Tempest hasn't mentioned a child. Surely she would have told me by now, right? I watch her eyes slowly meet mine.
Erica is my daughter. My 15-year-old daughter who has run away.
She looks to Tamlin and starts talking about running outside to look for her, but it's all mumbles as my mind processes this new information. Just like that, something inside me clicks. I don't care what she has or hasn't told me. I don't care what her life is like with her child's father. All that matters right this minute is getting the look of fear, desperation, and heartbreak off her face. Where's her room? I ask, pushing inside Tempest's home. We can track her between Collector and myself.
What set her off? Tamlin asks. She got in trouble at school. We had a fight.
Tempest chokes on her emotions.
She threw up that I'm not her mom, Tamlin. She hates me.
Shh, Tamlin soothes. She isn't her mom. I have more questions than answers, but this isn't the time. Collector and I pass through the living room and into the teen's bedroom. The purple comforter is a twisted mess with the soft glow of a lamp, the only illumination to the space. The window is open, and we easily climb through it, since it's a one-story house. With the dew on the grass, we easily see her footprints using the lights from our cell phones. We walk 2 blocks to a local park where we find a teenage girl sitting on a swing with tears running down her face. She gasps at our presence, and I see the fear. Good. The world is a dangerous place, and she needs to learn that. Erica. I say her name, and she looks around wildly, like she might bolt. Fight or flight. It's the battle between instincts inside all of us. Most of us have a stronger urge to run in any situation than to face it. Erica is a runner. I see it, feel it, and I know it. Your mom is really worried, I explain while Collector makes the call back to Tempest and the others.
I don't know you,
Erica says, standing up and backing away. Collector lifts his phone with speakerphone on.
Please come home, Erica. You're not in trouble, but I need to know you're safe.
Tempest's voice cracks. This is killing her.
What's the code, Mom?
Erica asks, keeping her distance from us.
Heffalump,
Tempest replies, and Erica relaxes.
I'm glad you remembered that, but please come home so we can talk.
Erica moves closer. I don't know what it is to be a parent, but I can imagine this is agony for her. We'll walk behind you so you are safe, I tell her, but step to the side to give her space. I don't know this girl's history or what makes her jumpy or soothes her soul. Letting her lead the way, we return back to their home while my mind wonders what kind of father this girl has. What kind of man leaves Tempest to deal with this? Why did she call Tamlin and not Erica's dad? It tells me he's not in the picture. What did Tempest mean about not being her mom? Where is the dad? Certainly he can't be involved, or she would have called him first. Maybe that's me hoping while jumping to conclusions, or maybe it's true. As soon as we round the corner to the front of the house, Tempest rushes out and wraps her arms around Erica. Even though she is Erica's mom, Tempest is shorter than her daughter. Erica doesn't return the embrace. It pisses me off. I stand down, though.
Thank you,
Tempest tells us all as she releases her daughter. Erica, go on inside and go to bed. We can talk about this in the morning. I see her daughter hesitate before finally going inside. Tamlin gives Tempest a hug.
You're sure you don't want us to stay?
Tamlin asks, to which Tempest shakes her head. It takes a few minutes and some reassurance before each of my brothers file out. I don't. Instead, when everyone is gone, I reach out and pull Tempest to me. She takes a moment before she relaxes against me.
I'm sure you have a million questions, she whispers against my chest.
Not the time, beautiful.
I don't know how much free time I'll have this visit, Deacon.
Maybe. It's probably after 3 a.m. Let's not say goodbye less than 24 hours since my arrival. You need sleep. Go inside. I'll take the couch. Get some sleep. She pulls away from me.
You can't stay here.
I guide her to her doorway and into her living room. Look, Tempest, you always take care of everyone else. You got a kid that just scared the shit out of you. I can see that you need sleep. I got watch. You get some rest so you can tackle what you got to with her, and do so with a clear head.
Deacon,
she starts to protest. I put my finger over her lips and silence her. Seen shit. Done shit. And there is no war zone more dangerous than navigating life with a teenager. You aren't alone. Not tonight, Tempest. Let me take watch so you can sleep and know she's not gonna take off on you. I'm gonna rig the window from the outside not to open. I'll take the couch. You get some sleep.
I don't know what to say,
she tells me on a yawn. I see the worry, the fatigue, and the stress in her features. It kills me. I can't take away her pain, her fear, but I can damn sure make sure she has help with her daughter, at least for tonight. Don't speak. Go to sleep. I got this. Tempest hesitates, so I take her by the hand and guide her to her room. I can dig through your drawers, find your pajamas, or your sex toys. She gives me a slight smile while shaking her head. Or you can get changed on your own while I fix the window. I'm not going anywhere, no matter what you say or do. I'd rather hit the couch than find a perch on the porch.
I don't know how to do this, Deacon.
I press my lips softly to her forehead. We're not doing anything, beautiful, except me taking care of you like you do for everyone else. Consider me a gift from karma for the night. Now sleep, so I can stop thinking about the silk and lace panties in those drawers, and the things I could possibly do to your body. You are a mom, and need to focus on your kid. I gotta be man enough to respect that right now. So do us both a favor and sleep, baby. She nods, and I back away, wondering so many things about the woman I've been sleeping with. More so, why her daughter, who is clearly a child she's raised, looks absolutely nothing like her. I have more questions than hours in a day. For now, I meant what I said. I want to take care of Tempest, and that means giving her peace of mind to sleep. I've been to war, but nothing is as terrifying as facing down a teenage daughter in the morning. I'm going to need to be on my game in just a matter of hours.
Chapter 6 Things I would tell my 15-year-old self now that I'm grown. Don't be afraid to say no. Melanie. Tempest. Deacon is in my house. I want to freak out, but honestly, I'm too tired. He is just a hookup. He has been my release when he rides in town and I miss him, but get over it when he's gone. I have so much on my plate, it's hard to add anything else. Don't get me wrong. Deacon is a solid man. He stays in communication with me, never makes me feel less than treasured. I just don't have time to allow myself to get swept up in it all. With the responsibilities I have with the shelter and Erica, I have never wanted a relationship. In fact, I have never had any relationship last more than a few months. Most men get tired of my dedication to my business. Then, there is Erica. I can't explain it. I just have this heavy pressure on myself to give her everything her mom would have wanted her to have. Stephanie was my very best friend. She was the sister I never had. We went through so much together. She trusted me with the final piece of her life, her child. It's something I don't take lightly. It's also something not many people know about, including Deacon. I should feel bad, but I don't. While Deacon and I have spent some time getting to know each other, we have barely covered the surface. In fact, if I remember correctly, Tamlin told me Deacon is a road name and not his real name. Part of me feels stupid for having sex with a man I don't actually know his name. But then again, Deacon comes around and my vagina is suddenly in charge, throwing all caution to the wind. I close my eyes, praying sleep will come. My mind goes back. He kissed me, Stephanie tells me, smiling big. And he finally told me he loves me. When? I ask, taking a bite of my sandwich. We are on lunch at school. After the football game, he kissed me and said I was his lucky charm since he scored. Then he kissed me again before he whispered, I love you. I laugh. Is that touchdown all he's gonna score? She shrugs her shoulders. I love Sean. I could let him pop my cherry. Does it scare you? She wipes her mouth with her napkin and drops it to her tray. I don't want to be like April and pregnant at 15, but sex itself doesn't scare me.
Well, Jessica's mom put her on birth control because her periods weren't regular or something. Maybe get your mom to do that for you so you won't have to worry. The warning bell rings, telling us lunch is over. Waking, it takes me a few minutes to get myself together. 15-year-old Stephanie is 15-year-old Erica's twin. Only Stephanie wasn't nearly as challenging as Erica. She got that and her eyes from Sean. I rub my eyes looking to the clock to see it's a little after 7. If I hurry, I can get Erica to school and still get to work. I'm in over my head with what to do with her running away. Deacon was right, though. I needed him here last night. I wouldn't have slept otherwise, and my head wouldn't be clear enough to make her go to school today. If I keep her home, she will dwell on the negatives in life rather than facing life. I've had enough experience with broken people to know the fine line we all walk with depression. Teenage depression statistics are through the roof. I will need to keep a close eye on her. Going to my bathroom, I empty my bladder, wash my hands, face, and teeth before getting dressed and making my way to the kitchen. The sight when I walk in is magnificent. In my kitchen, with his shirt off, is the beast of a man known to me as Deacon. His jeans are undone and hang low on his hips, showing the definition of his muscles. The tattoo of the American flag cut out on his ribs moves with him like the flag waving in the wind. He is in front of my coffee pot, pouring a mug full of hot brew. He looks to me, and my vagina wakes up like our whole world didn't shift yesterday. Putting the decanter back in its place, he carries the mug to me. "Here you go, beautiful."
"You made me coffee?"
He nods. "I heard you moving around. Thought you might need a jump start this morning." I take a sip. "Don't know what you've got on the agenda today, Tempest, but might need to clear your schedule for your kid."
Brushing past him, I set the mug on the counter. "Do not tell me how to parent. You don't know my situation or me well enough."
Whoa, hold on. I'm not telling you what to do. Raising a teenage girl must be hell with hormones, periods, boys, and drama. I'm just trying to help you get your head on straight after a night that I'm sure was hell for a mother.
You want to help? You can leave. He looks at me but doesn't speak. He goes to the couch where I see his boots at the end on the floor and a shirt hanging over my chair. Reaching out, grabbing the t-shirt, he pulls it on.
"You want me gone. I'm out. Just remember she's young, confused, and her night was as long as yours. Let her get her space, you get yours. I'll be out of your hair. You know how to reach me when you want me."
His words sting, even though they shouldn't.
"Don't act like we're something more than a hookup. Shit is bad. My life is more complicated than you or anyone can imagine."
He sits on the couch and pulls his socks out from inside of the boots and begins to put them on.
"Could be more between us. Could have someone to help you uncomplicate your life. That's on you. Ball's in your court. I get you, Tempest. You gotta keep the world at a distance so you stay in control. I'm not a man of games. I'm too old, see too much shit. You want to shut me out? Fine. I'm out."
Too many emotions hit me at once, and I feel tears hit the back of my eyelids as I close them tight.
"I don't know what I want," I admit, not sure whether I really want him to leave or him to hold me and tell me this is going to be okay. "At least now we're getting somewhere. Look, Tempest, I'm not here to push your buttons or add more to your plate. Hell, till this morning I didn't even know you had a kid. Kind of fucks with a man that I know every inch of your body and how to make you come with my tongue alone. But I didn't know you had a kid. Your life is saving others, I get it. I admire it. Damn, it makes you this total package. But you got a kid. A kid you're hiding."
"I am not." The look he gives me is a stone-cold stare.
"Do not fuck with me, Tempest. Shit I did, people I know, I can dig. I can find out everything you don't want me to know. Out of respect for you, and wondering if one day we could have something real,
I didn't search you.
Fury boils in my veins. Don't you fucking dare. You want to dig into me? Fine. Find whatever the fuck you're looking for, but you leave my daughter out of it. As for anything we could have had, well, you aren't the most open book, are you? What the hell do I know about you except you like to be bitten and suck the tip before choking down the shaft? Yeah, Deacon, I can play your little sex game, too. He stands with his hands on his hips.
Not trying to fight with you. I want to get to know you. But you left out a key element. Having a kid, that's a huge deal.
I ever ask you for money?
No, your pride would never let you do that.
I give out a huff. Stop acting like you know me.
I don't know you, but I can read you. Consider it a gift from Uncle Sam. Since you don't know me as much as I don't know you, I will go first. I was a Navy SEAL, Tempest. I have connections and skills that could make me completely disappear. My name is Gentry Hawkins. I got no family except the brothers I ride with. I got nothing to tie me down except I let myself get tangled up in this woman who is fire and ice, hard and soft, all bundled in one. She doesn't have to speak to have my attention. She's stronger than anyone I've ever met. She loves hard, but can't give herself a chance to have anything good come back to her. And apparently, she's got a secret kid tucked away.
The conversation ends when Erica emerges from her room. She moves down the hall without a word to her bathroom. Neither of us have ever been morning people. I listen as she flushes the toilet and then washes her hands, face, and teeth. Deacon stands in my living room, watching for her to come out and join us. As soon as she makes the first step in the room, he goes to her and extends his hand.
Good morning, young lady. I am Gentry Hawkins. My friends call me Deacon.
Erica takes his hand and shakes it. I'm Erica.
Not a man to talk much, not my thing. Had a mom, a single mom. I gave her hell when I was a teenager, too. Shit's tough sometimes. Just remember you got one mom. Time will come when she's gone, and you're gonna wish you did shit different.
Mister, all due respect, my one mom is gone. Dead and gone. She points me. She's the fill-in. Life is tough when you're the secret. I get you want to make things easier between me and my mom, but she doesn't understand me. She can't because I was handed off to her, and no one ever stopped to think about what I would want for myself. Erica is one tough cookie to crack. I hope Deacon realizes what he's up against. Navy SEAL or not, we are talking about a teenage girl who thinks she's unstoppable. Deacon looks in her eye.
You get a choice. One for yourself when you're 18. Get a job. Make shit happen for yourself, kid. But don't take for granted the love this woman has given you, whether she gave birth to you or not.
Tears fall down my face. Erica, our business is between us. You want to hate me for honoring your mom by doing what she asked of me? Then hate me forever. You want to tell the world I'm not your mom? Don't think I'll let it happen easy. You have no idea the things I have given up to keep my word to your mother. I just want to know my real family, she screams. I can't do that, Erica. Stephanie asked me not to. Deacon looks between us. He moves to the couch and takes a seat before patting the cushion beside him. I should be embarrassed that he's stuck in my dilemma. But I'm so overwhelmed by Erica's attitude, I don't have time to be.
Erica, take a seat.
She shakes her head, defiant little woman.
Look, I know people. I have connections. You want to know your history? I'll give it to you. Me and you, every single detail you want, I will find it.
Yeah? And what do you want from me?
Respect your mom. Chill out. Go to school, and I will lay out every piece of information for you when proof is real. In return, you cut your mom a break, and for now, the world doesn't need to know Erica Adams isn't really Tempest Adams' daughter.
I bite my bottom lip to stop myself from yelling out to him that he won't be doing anything about any information on Erica or her past. There is no way I will hurt her with the truth. She's this pissed off about me being her mom. How can she be reasonable when I tell her that her father killed her mother? At least she can pretend her dad is a superhero instead of the devil himself. If I react right now the way I want, Erica will rebel more. I know her. She has enough of Sean's spirit in her soul to move mountains when she is angry. I have to be the calm in her storm. Erica moves to stand in front of Deacon. She extends her hand. You'll tell me who I came from, and all I have to do is respect my mom and go to school? Deacon shakes her hand. We have a deal then. No trouble for you, and I'll lay your history at your feet. Erica looks to me, and I see hope in her eyes. She has no idea what she's allowing Deacon to do. There is no preparing her for what she's going to find out. There is no protecting her from the truth. And there is no feeling for me as her guardian more helpless than this very moment, when I know everything is about to fall apart around me and her.
Chapter 7. Gentry. Well, if there is a way to fuck something up 7 ways to Sunday, it is to get far too involved with the broad I'm fucking's real life. She didn't want me to know about Erica. From what I can gather, there are lots of reasons, the biggest one being she didn't want the world to know about Erica. I never felt the urge to settle down until I realized everywhere we went I wanted nothing more than another reason to come to Tennessee. You know how to reach me, I say to Tempest before looking to Erica. We have a deal. You do your part and I'll do mine. Whatever you feel about your mom, Tempest has given everything she has to you, including her love. Some kids never get that. Some kids are raised in unimaginable ways. I've seen firsthand what kids raised with hate can do. Get over whatever is plaguing you, Erica, and go out into the world and make it a better place. The girl only nods while I stand up to make my exit. I didn't have my workout this morning. I can feel the burn, this deep inside me fire where the demons want to crawl under my skin. I run to exhaust them. The prickles are hard to feel over the pain. This morning, I didn't run, though. I stayed here, waiting, watching, and wondering.
Deacon, please wait. I want to talk to you,
Tempest tells me before giving her attention to her daughter.
Erica, go get ready for school. I'll take you. As for the protest, I have a meeting with Mrs. Starling today at 3.
You will do the project. It's not negotiable. Erica looks around the room and never at Tempest.
And what about my running away?
We can discuss that later. Tempest looks directly at me. When we've both had time to rest and be clear-headed. Erica nods her head and moves into the kitchen to have breakfast. I sit down and wait. Tuning out the world around me, I think about my own mother.
Mom? Who's my dad?
Her blue eyes flicker with something I can't read.
Your dad was a man who gave his all for his country. Well, why don't you ever talk to his family? He had to have a mom, right?
She sighs and wipes her hands on the front of her nurse skirt.
Gentry, when your father died, we weren't married. His family, they didn't know about us.
Why can't we tell them, Mom?
If we tell them, they can help. And then you won't have to work the night shift at the hospital.
I see her swallow hard. She's doing what she always does and giving me the brave face. I'm 10 now. I can see the details she hides from me. I'm growing into a man. Life isn't always easy or fair, Gentry. Well, if that isn't the damn truth. My mother worked herself into an early grave trying to feed, clothe, and provide for me. Some days I think she only lived to see me make it to adulthood. At 18, I enlisted in the Navy. While I was completing my basic training in the Great Lakes, she passed away. Heart attack. Stress-induced. She was worried about me leaving. Her biggest fear was me going to war and dying like my dad. It also turns out my dad's family knew about us. They turned her away. Turned me away. There was a letter in my mother's things where my father's mother wrote to her and told her we would not be a shame upon his memory. My mother protected me from it, from them, and from the hurt. It's their loss, because I may not be something spectacular, but my mom was a gift to the world. I watch as Erica finishes her breakfast, gulping down some orange juice before putting her plate away. My entire childhood, I had all these questions about where I came from. I craved information on my past, on my family. The funny thing is, after my mom passed away, I never looked into it after reading the letter. She gave so much for me to have a full life without depending on these strangers, it almost felt like I would be disappointing her to find out who they were. Even now, I have the hacking skills to sort out who my dad was and where his family is. But I don't. I have enough connections that are still in intelligence I could easily get anything I seek. I simply don't. I don't need to know them to feel complete. Nothing about their presence in my life or lack thereof make me the man I am today, so I don't dig. I let it go. That single letter may be how my grandmother still feels to this day about me. She may have changed. I don't know. I'll never know, because I'll never seek it out. Having been in Erica's situation myself, I can understand her needs. At least I had my mother, who was really my mother. Not that Tempest hasn't given everything to be a mother to Erica. I think the young girl just is wanting to know her roots. I can give her this without putting her in danger or damaging her life with Tempest. I just need Tempest to trust me. Tempest may hate me for it, but it's information. What Erica does with the information when she turns 18 will be on her. The two of them quietly fall in sync together. The way Tempest watches Erica as she moves around without saying anything actually speaks volumes. The love is there. The real love of a mother to a child is there. Once I see they're ready to go, I stand and move to Tempest's side. Taking her keys from her hand, I simply smile as she looks up at me. I'll drive. You both have had a long night. Erica laughs, to which Tempest looks at her and smirks.
What do you find so funny?
This man, Mom. He's like swooping in and saving you.
Erica looks to me.
It's kind of nice.
I shake my head. Don't think I'm so nice, Erica. No matter what happens, ever, running is not the right answer. We all fuck up, kiddo. Gotta be woman enough to stand up and take it. Running only drags shit out and makes it worse. Man up, and it will be over quicker. Learn from your mistakes, own your shit, and move on.
Mom doesn't own that she's keeping me from my family, Erica mutters under her breath.
Reaching out, I drape my arm casually over the teen's shoulders, leading her out of the house with Tempest following. I get that you don't know me. I get you won't believe this. But I don't know my dad either. I'm a 39-year-old man with no family left, biologically.
The girl hesitates. She really thinks before she actually opens up, and we have this moment between us.
How do you deal with being different? When everyone else talks about their parents and looking like their mom and dad, how do you take it?
I sigh. Now we get to the root of the young girl's problem. Her peers and what they think and see. I take it with no weight. You see, Erica, I am one of a kind, and so are you. It's not about who you look like, who you act like, but rather who you are when no one's watching. She nods her head.
That makes sense.
Every once in a while, adults manage to know a thing or two. Keep that in mind, Erica. I take my arm off her. And remember, family isn't always blood. We reach Tempest's car, a Chrysler 300. Erica climbs in the back seat and immediately buckles. I have to slide the driver's seat back to get in. The ride to her school is quiet and quick. Erica gets out of the car and looks to me.
I don't know you, Deacon. But thank you for talking to me and actually listening to what I'm saying.
She turns her gaze to Tempest.
Mom, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have run away. You just don't hear what I'm telling you because it's not what you want to hear. I will do my suspension for the project protest, and I will do the project their way without fighting with you. I love you, Erica.
Tempest tells her daughter before Erica walks away and into her school. Only when she's safely inside the building do I pull away.
Working miracles, Deacon,
Tempest tells the space between us more than she actually says it to me. I'm not a miracle worker. I'm a partner, a team player, and a companion. If only she will let me in.
Chapter 8. Things I would tell my 15-year-old self now that I'm grown. Do not sneak out of the house. AF. Tempest. My stomach twists the entire ride home from Erica's school. Knowing I will be distracted all day because of Erica's situation, I send a message to Cameron Lynn to let her know I will be in late or I will just work from home today. Deacon, you aren't going to like this, but I can't let you give Erica the information she seeks. I go straight ahead and tell him what needs to be said as soon as we walk in my house. Well, it's one way to tell me no. Problem is, babe, I made a deal. I gave the girl my word. I'll get the information for her. Every inch of my body tightens. Deacon, you're opening Pandora's box. Once it's out, there will be no turning back. What are you so afraid of? I feel the tears hit like a flood. I don't even try to fight them. He's gonna kill us both. You're gonna give her this information and she seeks him out? She's dead. And I'm dead. I can die knowing she's okay. But to know he could harm her, I won't let it happen. Deacon's hands grip my hips and he holds me close. I'll lay down my life before I let that happen. You're not alone, Tempest. Giving her the information doesn't give her access to the man. Giving her the truth gives her power in a powerless situation. It's not as easy as you think. On paper, he seems harmless, a hero almost. He guides us to the couch, never letting me go. When he sits down, he pulls me on his lap. While I am twisted in knots over Erica knowing the truth, I find comfort in being so close to Deacon. Tell me about her mother. I relax and fall against his chest, resting my head on his shoulder, while he casually trails his hand up and down my jean-covered thigh. Stephanie was my best friend. We did everything together. In high school, she fell in love with a boy. Did you have a high school sweetheart, Tempest? Deacon asks. and it soothes me that he wants to know about me as much as Erica. No, I was too worried about school and Stephanie. I don't know how to explain it, but I just always felt like her protector.
Tell me about the boy.
Sean? Well, he was great. Honestly, from the beginning, he never pushed her for sex. He waited till she was ready. He was gentle, loving, and what they had was real back then. So what changed? Deacon still casually strokes my thigh, and I find I like it more than I should, considering this is the man who has given his word to Erica to turn my life upside down. Sean joined the Navy. I feel Deacon tense under me. He was fine until he was selected to become a SEAL. He did the training. He went on a mission. That's where things get confusing for everyone. Deacon stops tracing my thigh and shifts, forcing me to lift my head to face him.
What happened? I want every detail. Then I want his full name, date of birth, and if you have it, his social security number.
With hot tears flowing down my face, I blow out a breath. I can give you one better. I could tell you where he is. Deacon pulls back, causing me to lift my head. His expression is one I can't read.
You've known her whole life where he is and haven't allowed her to see her father?
I see the judgment in his eyes. His assumption is I am the bad guy here. This is why I don't tell people who Erica really is. Everyone wants to protect Sean's rights. Well, what about Stephanie's? He's been in military prison for involuntary manslaughter. Excuse me for not telling the world and crushing her dreams that he's some nice guy. I try to pull away from him, but he keeps me in place.
A SEAL committed manslaughter.
I nod my head. Sean Callahan went from a soft boy into a weapon created by the government for special operations. Only they didn't have control over him when he came home. The casualty was Stephanie.
And they said it wasn't intentional, or it was a plea deal? A SEAL is trained to make every move, every fucking breath, be with intention. The involuntary part doesn't fit what we are trained to do. I need more details. This just doesn't fit what was ingrained into his mindset as a SEAL.
My heart drops. Please, Deacon, please don't try to explain away what he did, like this was somehow Stephanie's fault. She was so afraid, so scared of him. Her only wish was to have her baby and let her be free from the man Sean became.
Forgive me for upsetting you further, but Tempest, you and Stephanie gave this man no choice, no chance to be in his child's life. You made this decision for him. What if it was just what he needed to balance what he had to do for his country?
He didn't want the baby. I heard him tell Stephanie he's killed kids before and he was going to kill their kid. He was angry because Stephanie said she was stillborn. He was angry he wasn't the one to kill the baby. My stomach churns, reliving the last moments I heard of my best friend's life.
They have facilities, specialists. All she had to do was reach out.
He seems distraught, and I wonder if it's because he was a SEAL. They weren't married. She tried, and she was shut down because she was his girlfriend, not his wife. When she called his commander, she was told Sean denied their relationship altogether.
Full name,
Deacon clips out, obviously frustrated with me.
I will be honest with you always, Tempest May Adams, even when you won't like it. I will be honest. I think I know Erica's dad personally.
Sean Michael Callahan.
Date of birth?
April 11th, 1980.
Need a computer,
Deacon says, gently pushing me off his lap. I decide not to argue or talk. Deacon is a man on a mission. Going to the den, I lift my laptop off my desk and take it to him. Deacon. Do whatever you feel you need to, but you need to know...
We're done.
I blow out a breath.
This kills me inside in a way I never thought possible. Deacon looks at me wide-eyed in shock, but doesn't speak. You're tearing my life apart because you have some honor code you want to live by. I respect it. I understand it. Under different circumstances, I might even find it to be another reason I could fall for you. This, though, Sean, will make sure Erica is in casket in the ground, or her ashes spread beside her mother's. I can deal with Erica hating me. I can take her words. As long as she is alive, I can deal with acid running through her veins towards me. What I can't do? I can't fail her mother more than I already have. I can't let him get to her. So, Deacon, do what you need to. It was a nice break when I had it. I'll hold on to the memories. But we are done. He closes the distance between us and locks his eyes onto mine. Oh, beautiful, we are far from done. Knowledge is power. I'm going to know all there is to know about this man so I can keep you and Erica safe. I understand why you want to protect her. I understand your fears. I also think I know this man personally, and if that's the case, and he is who I think he is, I know what broke him. I can't leave a frogman helpless, but I give you my word I won't let him hurt you or your daughter. Ever. Deacon, it's not that simple. Sometimes, Tempest. It is, if you let it be.
Chapter 9. Gentry. Sean Callahan. A moment in my past. I remember the mission where he took a bullet to the right leg. He never rotated to another team again. In the SEALs, we didn't often get switched around. The level of trust you had to have with the men in your unit required you to be with them long-term. Callahan washed out after that mission. I understand it. He was young. He probably didn't think it was true what they told him about the kids. They can be as dangerous as adults in some places. It sucks he had to learn the hard way. I struggled to see the man who was afraid of his own shadow that night as this killer. I don't discount what Tempest is saying, but he passed the psychological evaluation to get in the SEALs. Tempest left for work about 20 minutes ago. Since then, I sent the email to the guy I know still working intel. Then I made a call to a friend who reached out to another friend to get the firm whereabouts of Sean Callahan. My emotions have to be pushed aside while seeking information. The instincts inside me to protect Tempest and Erica fight my knowledge of the man I once trusted my life to. I'm not surprised to find out that Callahan is now a free man. He did his time in a military prison and also underwent extensive therapy for his depression, paranoia, and anxiety disorders. The news and media outlets are given information on most military cases. His release was done quietly, which has probably given Tempest a false sense of freedom. Since getting out, Sean Callahan has stayed out of trouble. He has also gone ghost. After Stephanie's death, he cut all ties with his family. He even missed his own father's funeral, even though it would have been a break from his time in the brig. This isn't typical of a SEAL. While, yes, we are trained to have no marks that would lead an enemy to our family in order to protect the innocent, we value family. When you see people dying, or you are the one to end someone's life, it makes you reflect. Like Tempest, I've seen bad shit, so I know when to hold on to good. I never expected her to have a daughter. Honestly, no woman has ever held my interest the way she does. What does this mean for the future? Well, who knows? The deeper I seem to find myself feeling, the more complicated it seems things become. With her at work and all this uncovering Callahan's past, it has me pondering a lot of things.
One of them being a relationship. A real relationship with the woman who is small but mighty. Picking up my phone, I follow my instincts. Hello, Judge answers on the second ring. Need a word with your woman. I also happen to be hungry as fuck. Can we meet for sandwiches? He moves the phone away, but I can still hear him. Tamlin Deacon needs a word and some grub. You want to go eat at the sub place by Haven's Harbor? I can't make out what she replies. Yeah, brother, meet you in 10. After clicking the phone to off, I close Tempest's laptop after placing a quick dinner order for later. From there, I go into the kitchen and do something I have never done before. Finding a paper and pen, I scribble my note. Beautiful. I had a meeting. I'll be back before dark to stay and talk. Dinner will be delivered at 1800. The driver has already been tipped. You worked hard today. Take a load off. If you need anything else, you know how to reach me. See you sooner rather than later. Deacon. Finishing that note, I feel the urge to leave another one. Deciding everything with Tempest needs to be on instincts, I go for it. Erica, I hope you had a good day at school. I've gotten started on your information. Please understand, these things take time. I've ordered dinner, and I hope you aren't a vegetarian. Remember, your mom loves you, so give her a break, and yourself one, too. My number is in a text on your phone that I sent while you were in school. If you need anything at all, even someone just to listen, you know where to reach me. See you tonight, and I expect to hear good things. Deacon. I have never written a note of any kind to any female in my entire life. I never even gave my mom a single card, not even a homemade one. It's a regret I have. Because she never had some tangible piece of evidence that I did love her. Absently, I rub my stomach. Is this what butterflies feel like for women? I feel like I have bugs dancing around inside me as my intestines twist up into a million knots. While the thought of a future with Tempest sounds appealing, will she let me in? I want to get to know Erica. But is that even possible coming into their lives this late in the game? Deciding I won't get answers until I go after what I want, I finish up. So I leave the notes, lock the front door with the spare key Tempest gave me, and head to the sandwich shop. Ordering quickly, I take my sandwich and sit down with Judge and Tamlin, who are already seated and eating. "Hey, Deacon," Tamlin says with a smile. I turn the small chair around and straddle it with the back of the chair facing the table. I never like to feel boxed in. I'll cut to the chase. I want to take Tempest on a date.
Not happening, soldier.
She bites into her sandwich while I study her. First, I'm a sailor, not a soldier. That's the army. Second, why not?
Well, you bikers aren't the best at dating.
She retorts while trying to chew her food. I suck at dating. I'll be honest, Tamlin, I've never really done it. The relationship thing. But Tempest, she's in deep with Erica. We have this connection. I think I need to take her on a real date. She smiles at me.
Yeah, one that doesn't involve sex would be more meaningful.
I don't argue. Instead, I pick up my sandwich and eat.
Look, Deacon, Tamlin says, taking a serious tone. I don't want to see either of you get hurt. Tempest doesn't have room in her life for a relationship. You don't have a bad track record, but you got, like, no record, so I don't know what's worse.
I like Tamlin on an average day. She makes Judge happy. But her loyalty, her love for Tempest, makes me like her even more. Okay,
You laid it out for me, so I'm gonna lay it out for you. Watch your tone, brother, Judge warns me. We may be family, but Tamlin is just keeping shit real with you. I eye Judge before turning my attention back to Tamlin. Seen shit. Done shit. Bad shit. No Tempest is all the good I don't deserve in this fucked up life. Bottom line, my mama didn't raise some disrespectful punk. You and Erica are the only family Tempest has left. I'm gonna take her out. I'm just trying to let you know. You willing to fight for her? Tamlin asks, forgetting her sandwich, forgetting her man, and forgetting that I have a bad track record, it seems. As hard and long as I have to, I tell her, feeling the crazy storm in my belly again. You willing to let her go? One question. A single inquisition, and I feel like Tamlin just kicked me in the nuts. If that's what she wants. If that's what's best for her and Erica. Yeah. Then all I can say is, Deacon, you're in for one hell of a ride with her, and it's one you better hold on tight and never let go. Her words are straightforward, and I respect it. That your blessing? I let myself have hope. Tamlin looks to Judge, then to me, smiling. Closest thing you're gonna get. Yeah. You gonna claim her? No holding back now. Yeah, I am. I look her in the eyes. You willing to walk away from Devil's Due? Judge is the one to ask this, surprising me. I nod, but don't speak the words, because it burns deep inside me. As much as it hurts, yeah, I would. For Tempest, I would change my entire lifestyle because she makes it worth it. The way she silently and simply just gets me. She ain't leaving here. She's too invested, he tells me what I already know. Wouldn't ask her to. Then, if you brought us here for approval, you get it. Judge pauses. Walk the line, Deacon. I don't want to end up on opposite sides with you. But you fuck up with her, I'll end you, or I'll fucking die trying. I get you, Judge. Appreciate the chat. Respect your position. Now I need you to respect mine. Judge nods at me while Tamlin just has some goofy grin like she is as happy as a kid on Christmas morning. I nod, standing, suddenly not so hungry. The feeling in my stomach isn't the burn of demons past, no. This is a feeling I'm used to. It's go time. Mission accepted. If someone would have asked me if I ever planned to make a go of anything before, I would have said fuck no in an instant. Tempest Adams, we have this connection I can't explain, and maybe I don't want to. What I do know, without a doubt, this is a ride I'm ready for. Watch out, Tempest. I'm holding on, and never letting go.
Chapter 10. Things I would tell my 15-year-old self now that I'm grown. Don't be afraid to stand up for yourself, and never let the bullies win. Jana. Tempest. I don't know why waiting in the school office still makes me so nervous. I mean, really, I'm 36 years old. The office should not bother me. Especially this school. I volunteer here every chance I can. I also hold a spot on the board since Haven's Harbor created this school. It was my way to allow the children of the battered women to have an education, meet state requirements, but do so under the radar. It also means I was able to make security requirements so that I can work and know all the students of the school are safe here. Erica comes in the door, with Mrs. Starling on her heels. "Let's go to the conference room," she instructs. I stand and follow them, still not sure what to say. "Thank you, Mrs. Adams, for meeting with me," she greets softly. "Erica spoke with me today that she will do the project after having a conversation with you." I look at my daughter, and I see the pain in her eyes. "We've been going through some things in our personal lives, Mrs. Starling. I just don't understand why she took things so far," Mrs. Starling starts to explain herself. As I get ready to respond, Erica is the one to speak. "History, it keeps repeating itself. Hate breeds hate. Why can't we do a project where we aren't asked to take ourselves to a dark place in history and mentally repeat repression? Why can we not have a project about the lessons we have learned from history that make my generation and the next want to do better? People protest for all sorts of things, from equality in marriage to legalizing marijuana. I organized a protest, a peaceful one at that, seeking a change and a chance to be heard." Erica blows out a breath. It's amazing to see her so passionate about something. I know this isn't a moment I should probably be proud of, but I am. She is standing up for herself, and not simply falling in line. Isn't the point of the project to put ourselves in the mindset of those individuals who made changes in history? Didn't they just want to be heard? Recognized? Seen? Understood? Martin Luther King Jr., he had a dream. Hate took him out before he could see his dream come to life. While things are far from perfect, there have been steps in the right direction for equal rights. He just needed a platform to be heard, to strike a change. You asked me to journal all these time periods so I could feel what these people did as they faced their unique challenges. But Mrs. Starling, you never listened. The protest was called Break the Chains. It was my voice, my moment to say, let the past not hold anyone back. Don't allow yourself to go into a mindset of hate by feeling their oppression. Instead, celebrate their accomplishments by breaking the chains of the past. Rather than go back in time, stay in the present and be thankful for the things we have today because of their risks, their sacrifices. I sit beside my teenage daughter, enthralled. One day this girl is going to be a powerhouse of a woman. She is going to change the world. I turned in a report. My version, but you didn't read it. You refused to listen. You boxed me in. I had to do your project your way. If you had read my report, you would know I took history decade by decade and not only named, but described in detail a person of influence. I also took my project a step further and wrote what my generation could do to impact the future. I broke the chains of the past to give you my ideal future, one where sex, race, sexual orientation, religion, social economic status, jobs, homes, cars, none of it holds anyone back. No, we find a world where people are people, and we look to lift each other up instead of instantly finding a reason to tear someone down. Mrs. Starling opens her mouth and closes it, but doesn't speak. Erica reaches in her backpack and pulls out a folder. She slides it to Mrs. Starling. Here is the report you gave me a zero on without reading it. Here is the petition the student body signed, along with a statement from each student about the chain link they would break to make our future a brighter place if they could. There are 564 signatures. You will find 564 chains ready to be broken. Erica, while this is powerful, you still didn't follow the directions. I snap. Mrs. Starling, you can stop your power trip and pissy shit right now. If these people in history that you wanted Erica to study had simply followed everyone in life, there would be no change. They took a chance and so did Erica. Your project was to give empathy to these students for what people of the past experienced. Erica has done so. And she has done so without some dark cloud about how wrong things have been. but rather with empowerment to see her future and have hope she can be the change she wants to see in the world. I stand up and look at Erica. Come on, honey. She still has another day of in-school suspension, but I will read the report and grade it. Don't bother. She's not having another day of suspension. Shame on you for not reading the report before reacting. Her protest, while possibly disruptive, was a peaceful one. Instead of giving her a platform and a voice, you stifled her. Erica has been raised to be a leader, not a follower. In this moment, I couldn't be more proud of the young lady she is growing into. As for you, you can stick it. You want to push the issue? I'll see you at the board meeting. I thought you would see her defiance. I swallow back my emotions. I'm a proud woman. I'm a strong woman. But I am not so into myself I can't admit when I'm wrong. I turn to face Erica. I am sorry I didn't give you a platform at home to explain yourself. I'm sorry I didn't take the time to see your side as equally as I did the school's. I was wrong. I am wrong, Erica. I have held you back instead of encouraging you to go forward. I love you, my daughter. I am so very proud of you and the statement you have made. Erica has tears falling down her face, as do I when she embraces me. I learned from the best, Mom. I learned from you. Every little thing, every emotion, every up and every down, every single thing doesn't touch the wholeness I feel as her mother with her in my arms. I have messed up more times than I can count, but damn it, I've gotten some of it right, too. I love you, Erica Haven Adams, more than life itself. I know, Mom. Can we go home now? I blow out a breath. After last night, I have peace. This is a moment in life I will hold on to get me through the rough days. No matter how much I mess up, my example to her is a woman of strength, courage, and not backing down.
Chapter 11. Gentry. Leaving the sub shop, I'm filled with a different energy. Excitement, even. Nervous, maybe. It's definitely a combination I'm not used to. I've always followed orders. I grew up with the expectations of my mother for me to finish school. From there, I joined the Navy right out of school, and every move I made was done with a directive from someone else. To actually be going for something for myself on my own, it's a different feeling, and one I find I might like. The sun seems to be brighter. I feel like I should turn in my man card this woman has me so twisted. It's crazy. Hitting the open road, I let the bike calm me. My body, my energy, and my pulse fall into the same easy pattern as the steady tick of the Harley-Davidson engine. An hour later, I sit not far from the trailer park I was told Callahan is living in. He's too close. I don't get a good feeling. He cut off all contact with his family, for all purposes like taxes, jobs. Sean Callahan is off the grid. It took two markers, one to a CIA operative, to get the information. A single email. An address. A car registered under an alias. And one picture. I gave a marker that basically puts me at the beck and call of not one but two government undercover agents for any job they need done off the books. I don't often do these kinds of things. Unfortunately, the type of justice we seek with the Devil's Due MC doesn't pay the bills. Vigilante justice. The shit feels good to the soul. Solving unsolved crimes, giving people closure, and sometimes their own happily ever after, is what we do. The value is priceless. The pay is not of the monetary variety, but the feeling of knowing a wrong has been righted to some degree.
Occasionally, I've offered myself to undercover operations to add to my savings. We all have to make our own money. I get a retirement check from the Navy, but that isn't anything to brag about. When you live out of a saddlebag and a hotel every night, it costs money to have no roots. Callahan, when he was found guilty of manslaughter, under the code of military justice, his pay, benefits, and anything he could ever claim to his time in service was taken away. He did his time. He is a convicted felon, but that doesn't prevent him from having a job, paying taxes, and moving on in life as a productive member of society. But he went ghost. Why? It doesn't make sense, but it does at the same time. I understand the need for a fresh start away from his tainted past. The problem is using a false identity could land him back behind bars. One would think he learned his lesson already. From my location, I can watch, observe, and not be seen. So that's what I do. Other than the blinds in the window of the trailer and what I will assume is the living room, moving every 20 minutes, I can't confirm or deny that the intel is accurate. Whoever is in the trailer is definitely paranoid. However, without them actually emerging or raising the blinds all the way, I don't have the visibility to confirm identity. Is it Sean Callahan who is now living life as Marvin Dean, or someone else altogether? I climb off my bike and advance to the trailer. My phone pings with a text, so I pull it out to find two messages. From my new location, I can still see the trailer, but not be visible to anyone looking out. The first text is from Tempest.
Thank you for your note. It was a pleasant surprise, and one that is sincerely appreciated.
I smile and type my reply. Gotta keep my woman fed. That feels good. It feels right, calling Tempest my woman. The reply pings before I can even open the other message.
Who says I'm your woman?
I can't stop the smile on my face from growing bigger as I reply. You and me, beautiful. We're gonna make a go of this. I'm gonna fuck up. You're gonna have to give me a little understanding on that. Never been in a relationship. I'm gonna take you on a date, a real one. Already talked to Tamlin and made my intentions known. I'm gonna get to know your daughter. And you just need to know I'm in this for the long term. Not exactly the way I wanted to tell her all this. I'm just not a man to hold back. I want this. Knowing how long Tempest went without a lover before me, she wants this too. Life is short. Too short to not take a chance. I slide the screen to see my other message. It's an alert from a software I have filtering a copy of every email Tempest gets to my phone. I open the app. From concernedforher@freemail.com. Subject, inquiry on your facility. Clicking the email, I freeze. One would think we're a little old for a hide-and-seek. Then again, a woman who fights for the rights of others shouldn't steal someone's kid either. It's okay. I like playing games. I play to win. And I'm coming for her. Concerned for Tempest's mental state in finding this email and knowing I can't delete the evidence, I make the only call I can. Judge, I say as soon as it says connected. Get to Tempest now. Distract her. Don't alarm her. I'm an hour out. Got it. He clicks off, and my heart pounds in my chest. The thing about brotherhood is seen, felt, and doesn't have to be spoken. It's that bond. He didn't ask questions. He didn't need to. I called, he answered, and he'll do what I asked until I arrive. Just like I would for him. Moving in on the trailer, I find a small gap in a window on the end of the trailer. Looking inside, I see a small kitchen opening to the living room. I pull out my small set of binoculars. Inside sits a man on the couch currently peering outside of the living room blind. A full beard covers his once clean-shaven face, the nautical star tattoo on his neck with the S cutting diagonal over the star gives him away. Sean Callahan got the ink while healing from his leg wound and before he was locked up. Tattoos are forever, and they never lie. Knowing he is tucked away here, for the moment at least, I take off, trying to get to Tempest before she finds the email on her own and freaks out. Panic causes a chemical change in our bodies and opens us up to make mistakes. I won't let Tempest make a mistake that could get her harmed, or Erica, either. Every mile that passes gets me closer to her, and I find myself settling like a magnet. If you fight the pull, it's a strain. If you just let go, you click. Tempest, my beautiful, strong woman, I'm ready to let go and click. No matter who was behind the email, no matter the challenges, this trip to Tennessee has me figuring out my shit for the first time in my adult life. This is where I belong. I'll always have the devil's due. I'll always back my brothers. But for me, my life, my future, it's with this woman who has more strength, courage, and heart than humanly possible. She's the mighty storm. And she was made to be with me. If anyone tries to hurt her or keep us apart, they will find out every skill set the United States government gave me in my Navy SEAL training. Fuck with her, it's fucking with me, and I fuck back harder, faster, and to a whole different level.
Chapter 12. Things I would tell my 15-year-old self now that I'm grown. Don't be afraid to speak your truth. Carol. Tempest. The knock at my door startles me because I gave Deacon a key this morning before I left for work. Why would he knock? I'm not expecting anyone else. The man has me tied up in knots. I want to be angry with him for getting involved with my situation with Erica. Then he goes and orders dinner early. I have never had someone concern themselves with whether I have a good meal and an evening to relax. Actions speak. His today spoke volumes. He left me and Erica a note on the kitchen counter. He didn't just think of me. Here, I dropped having a child on him without warning, but he accepts it. Watching her read the note he left specifically for her, my heart swelled with happiness. More so, I could see in her eyes it mattered. She was shocked he thought of her as much as I was, maybe more. And dinner. Before he went about his day, he took the time to think ahead about my evening, and again, he had food delivered for Erica and me. It wasn't pizza either. He had Philly cheesesteaks delivered along with fried pickles. He also had a ham and cheese sub delivered with instructions for Erica to pack it in her lunch tomorrow. Excitement fills me to think of the many ways I plan to thank Deacon for his act of kindness and consideration. I look through the peephole to see Judge and Tamlin standing on the other side of the door. Strange. Tamlin is my cousin and my best friend. She would text or call before coming over. If that didn't work, we have Twitter. When she was hiding from her dad, we used Twitter and still have our profiles active. I wouldn't imagine she would use it now, but why wouldn't she at least call or text? Automatically, I have my guard up. Opening the door, I let them in as Erica comes from her room to see who is here. Like every time she sees Tamlin, she rushes to her, hugging her tight. Family. It means so much to my daughter. I just wish she would see sometimes family isn't the blood shared in your veins, but rather the people who have your back, share your heart, and give you unconditional love and loyalty. "Hey, guys, why are you here?" I asked Judge, while Tamlin immediately goes to the kitchen with Erica asking about her day and the protest. Luckily, I text her about the meeting at school, so she knows Erica isn't in any trouble with me for the project anymore. I even explained I was wrong for not allowing my daughter to explain herself to me in the first place, and me simply backing the school. The running away? She was wrong. And we still have to tackle it.
Deacon's on his way. He just didn't want y'all here alone with it getting late, Judge explained, stepping inside. We're gonna hang out and he'll be here soon. Need some food, Tempest. I'm hungry.
I study the man who has been in Tamlin's life forever. He literally grew up next door. Through the years, he stayed in contact with me to keep an eye on her since she lived here for some time. Bladen. I toss out his real name instead of his road name to show him how serious I am. Don't fuck with me. Where is Deacon?
Feed me first,
he jokes, and we go into the kitchen. Deacon ordered me an extra sandwich for my lunch tomorrow if you want to eat that, Judge, Erica offers up. No, I say back, smirking at Judge. He can eat buttered noodles. That sandwich was ordered for you with a purpose. Judge can suck it up, or he should have eaten before he came over. Judge looks to Tamlin, then to me.
I did. We're a little late because I had to finish.
Tamlin smacks his chest. I love their playfulness, but I don't want to hear about their sex life. More so, I need to know Deacon safe. Why else would they be here? Why am I so worried about a man I barely know? Deep down, I know why. The connection we have is something special deep inside me that every time I try to push it away, it comes back stronger, announcing itself and making me aware. Everything with Deacon is different, stronger, and harder to let go of or walk away from. It also scares me to death. I make buttered noodles while Erica goes on and on about her version of the project. Breaking the chains of the past, she continues on and on while I cook. She takes off to shower when I serve the plates to Judge and Tamlin.
This thing you got with Deacon, is it what you want?
Judge asks, surprising me. I jerk my head back, surprised by his question. What thing with Deacon?
Known you a long damn time, Tempest. I know my brother. I know the kind of men we are. Deacon's laying claim. That's as serious as it gets in our world. Marriage isn't a commitment as strong as claiming a woman to a biker. Deacon's making claim. I know him. If he hasn't said it yet, it's coming. Need to know it's what you want. If not, brother or not, I'll step in for you because of the history we have, Tempest. I won't like it because Deacon is a good man. He'd be good for your life. But out of respect for who you are to me and to Tamlin, I'll make him stand down.
I try to process what he's telling me. He would make Deacon back off and leave me alone. I don't want that. Not at all. I try to process my own emotions. I know I would like to see what we could have together. The problem, I have a hard time trusting it's real. Bladen, I've never had someone else. I've never had a partner, a longtime lover.
Getting deep with me, Tempest. Like you want me to step into the feelings pool with you.
He laughs, and Tamlin comes over, standing next to her man. Take a chance, Tempe. Deacon's a good man. The devils do. It's a family like we always wanted and never had. Yeah, Mom. Take a chance. Deacon listens to me. I feel like I have a voice. Erica immediately hangs her head. I hate that I've made her feel this way. I want her to be empowered and open to telling me anything. I want her to know she is heard. Just not about her dad. I can't risk it. She just doesn't see it. I'm going to have to face telling her the truth. I don't get to answer any of them because Deacon walks through the front door. I exhale, long and hard. Relief. He's safe. He is here and okay. My heart swells, my belly swirls, and I find myself moving towards him automatically.
Thanks, man.
He addresses Judge as he makes long strides to me. His eyes are driven, hungry like I'm the prey.
How fast did you drive? We just got here about 45 minutes ago, Judge says,
but Deacon's eyes are trained on me.
Throttled down
is the only response he gives before reaching me, pulling me to him, and planting a loud, wet kiss on my lips in front of everyone. Finding myself relieved he's here, I give in and give back like this is the last kiss I may ever get with him. When we're both breathless, he pulls away. Gotta talk outside with Judge. We'll be on the front porch. Then I'll be inside for the night. With a kiss to my forehead, he lets me go and steps out front. Mom! Erica says, covering her eyes. Tamlin smirks at me. Damn, that was hot. Shut it. I feel my cheeks heat. Does Deacon know how twisted in knots he has me? I crave his touch. I want nothing more than to get to know the man who makes my toes curl with every kiss. I want this. I want a life and a love. With Gentry Deacon Hawkins.
Chapter 13. Gentry. Judge and Tamlin leave not long after I fill Judge in on the danger. He's going to let the rest of the guys know what's going on. Rowdy and Michelle aren't here, so we are a man down. Collector, ex-judge, and Trapper will set up a rotation to keep someone on Erica and someone on Tempest while I confirm my suspicions on who sent the email. I settle on the couch with Tempest beside me when Erica comes from her room.
Thank you for dinner, Deacon, she says, smiling at me.
I believe in truths, Erica. So I want to be real with you. I'm in a motorcycle club. We travel. A lot. I see the disappointment hit her face, and it causes me to pause. She doesn't want me to go. I read it in her eyes. It fills me with pride.
So this is goodbye? I mean, we don't know you. Mom knows you more, but you come in and actually listen to me just to take off? Why buy me dinner? Why treat my mom like you want to protect her? Men and their games.
She huffs, standing to take off.
No wonder all the women at the shelter are man-haters. I get why they want to be in that club. Bye, Deacon.
She dismisses me. A 15-year-old girl just dismissed me. No, I half shout, getting her to stop. What I want to talk to you about is me staying. The club, well, the boys, most of them, plan to ride back to Alabama soon. I want to stay here with you and your mom. Get to know you both. Erica turns and faces me, and I see the unshed tears building in her eyes.
You want to stay? With us?
I told you I believe in truths. Truth is, I got these feelings for your mom. I don't know you well, but I get you. I think we have a lot in common, Erica. So I would like your permission to take your mom on a date. I would also like an opportunity to stay around and get to know you both. Her mouth hangs open in shock.
You want to build a family with us?
I nod. Tempest playfully slaps my stomach.
Hello, I'm here, people, and this involves me. I don't think you should ask my daughter before talking to me.
I laugh. Oh, baby, I gotta clear the way so I can focus on winning you over solely. Erica rushes over and practically climbs in my lap as she hugs my neck.
You really want to be with us? You think ahead, Deacon. You think about the day ahead my mom and I have. You worry, and you took the time to listen to me without knowing me. No one has ever given my mom a break.
She pulls back to look at Tempest.
Not even me. Mom, I take for granted that you will just put up with whatever I dish out. Deacon, he thinks of you. In your journal to me, one of the lines you say is, "Find a love that puts you first, a love that thinks ahead." I know you leave me these notes with opinions and advice. I know you don't believe in happily ever after and romance, but, Deacon, Mom, he's good, and you always say, "Seek out the good." Oh, baby girl, those journals are for your future. I should have known you would use my own words against me.
With my arm draped over Tempest's shoulder, I give her a squeeze. Want to fill me in on these journals? Erica excitedly answers.
Since I was a baby, my mom writes me journals with notes that she would have told herself as a child now that she's an adult. She shares them with me, but I'm not allowed to write in them until I'm 18, when she's going to give them all to me.
Heart. That's Tempest. Where her daughter is concerned, her heart is on her sleeve. Erica's phone rings in the other room, sending her shooting off. Now that I have a moment of quiet with Tempest, I need to tell her what I know. Before I can, she turns to me, reaching out and cupping my face in both her hands. She pulls me in and kisses me. Pulling away after a few moments, she smiles softly at me.
I'm gonna mess this up, Deacon. I think you're crazy to want to be more involved with a woman like me. You had a good thing just driving in, getting late, and heading out. Are you sure you want to change things?
I press my lips to her forehead and pause. I fucked up. Your body, it's undeniable. You aren't a drive-through where I place my order, hit the box, and ride on without a look back. I want to kick my own ass for that. There is something more between us. There has been for a long time now. Am I crazy? About you, yes.
This feels crazy.
I sigh. Maybe so. But we can talk about us for the rest of our days together. I'm not going anywhere, Tempest. But I gotta tell you something. Her eyes grow serious.
You aren't a murderer, are you? A married man? I don't think I can be a sister wife. I'm not good at sharing, Deacon.
I can't help but laugh, even though this is a very serious moment. First, you can call me Gentry. Deacon is what everyone else sees and knows. I want you to know all of me, including the man my mom raised me to be. And he isn't Deacon who walks the line between outlaw and law-abiding. Gentry is the boy my mom believed in, loved, and gave everything to. Gentry is the piece of me no one gets but you and your daughter. She blows out a hot breath.
That's the most beautiful thing anyone has ever given me, other than the day Stephanie placed Erica in my arms.
She pauses.
You should know I freaked out then, and I'm sort of freaked out right now.
Shifting, I turn so I can look her in the eyes. Second, I'm not a murderer. I'm also not married because I have never felt an ounce of what I feel for you for any other person in my life. You have me twisted in all the right ways, Tempest. As for sharing, baby, you gotta know. I don't share, either. This is you and me. You, me, and Erica. Other than a dog, if you want a puppy, that's it. This is us.
Phew.
What we need to talk about is your email. She jerks back a little in surprise.
What about it?
Today, when I was looking into Erica's dad, I installed an application to alert me to your emails. You got one today. Baby, it's not good. Pulling out my phone, I let her see the email. I won't keep something from her. Sean Callahan is in the dust. The paper trail is non-existent for him. I called in some favors and learned he's going by Marvin Dean. At first, when he was released, he went to South Carolina, then North Carolina. It took some time, but a few months ago he set himself up about an hour from here. He has a job doing construction where he gets paid under the table. Tempest. I know the training Callahan has had in tracking someone. He is closing in on you. On Erica. Tempest jumps up and rushes to her room. I follow, closing the door behind us so Erica can't hear. In case she tries to come in, I lock the door, not wanting her to walk in and catch the wrong information. Tempest goes to the closet, grabbing two suitcases. She opens the smaller of the two on the top of the bed where her pillows are revealing the bottom layer covered in stacks of cash. What are you doing?
Go bag. The other suitcase has clothes, shoes, and papers for Erica and I. This one I'll add a few things to since I have time. Tomorrow morning I'll get her transcripts from school and set her up to do a virtual classroom on the road, and we'll be gone.
She moves around the room like I'm not even standing here. At her nightstand, she pulls out a picture of her and another girl, I assume to be Stephanie, along with three journals that I also assume are the ones she is currently working on for Erica.
I've always had a backup plan, she says, moving around the space. Time to put it into action.
Reaching out, I stop her movements, grabbing her arms. Baby, breathe. I give you my word. I will keep you and Erica safe. I just wanted to make you aware.
He can't get her. I don't care about me, but I promised Stephanie he can't get Erica.
Pulling her into me, I hold her close. I know you are super mom and take on the world by yourself. Tempest, you are not alone. Let me carry this burden with you. I understand, baby. I promise I will keep you both safe, and you don't have to run. I feel her shudder in my embrace. I slowly trail my hands up her back until I reach her neck. From there, I cover jawline on both sides, tilting her head to get her eyes on me. My word, Tempest. He'll not get to hurt either of you. Together, we'll tell Erica the truth about her father, her mother, and where she comes from. She was made from love. Just Callahan got lost in a war zone he never should have been in. Doesn't make shit right, but your daughter is strong enough to handle the truth. I'm strong enough to stand by your side through it all, and baby, you're strong enough to stay put. Keep up the work you do, and not have to feel threatened.
You're too good to be true, Gentry.
My name on her lips, I am rattled. Fucking fallen hard and fast, Tempest May Adams. Twisted up in you. The words come out of my mouth before I can stop myself. This is a risk, exposing my feelings to her. I have never been this raw, this open before. Feeling vulnerable, I lean in to kiss her, soft, slow, and with passion. What starts out tenderly quickly becomes so much more. Her arms come up, pulling me to her tighter. My tongue devours her mouth as I keep my hands on her jaw, my thumbs tracing her cheeks, keeping her face exactly where I want it. Her hands roam, grabbing my ass. Tempest pushes her body against me. I move us to the edge of her bed, never breaking the kiss. When I sit on the side, she straddles me and grinds herself against my jean-covered erection. The sensation sends fire through me. I want her. I need her. Pulling away, I lick her neck before sucking her earlobe gently. Her hands come up my shirt, teasing my sensitive nipples. She tugs and pulls, making me separate just enough for her to pull my shirt off.
Gentry, please,
Tempest begs, working her hips as she dry-humps me almost over the edge like a teenage boy. I remove her shirt and bra, immediately taking her nipple into my mouth. Licking and sucking, I love the whimpers coming from her mouth.
Please, Gentry. Please don't let him get us.
She pleads, and I release her tit so I can look her in the eyes. You're safe with me, Tempest. You're always safe with me. Believe it. Panting, she replies.
I believe in you, Gentry Hawkins.
Her words, her belief, her confidence in me has me ready to explode inside her, marking her as mine inside and out. My name coming off her lips is a gift from heaven. She climbs off me just long enough to remove her pants and panties. I undo my jeans, sliding them off and releasing my cock. Taking my hand, I stroke myself a few times before moving to her thighs. Rubbing her pussy, I tease her. She bites her lips while tweaking her nipples. Moving my thumb, I press between her lips and make circles on her clit, bringing her just to the edge.
Need you, Gentry.
Need Godzilla, she begs, stepping closer. Can we talk about you naming my cock? Not up for discussion, sailor. I slide my finger in her tight, wet heat, feeling her inner muscles clamp around my digit. I finger fuck her, slow, steady, knowing she's close. Rocking into me, I let her lose herself to my fingers.
Gentry.
She moans my name, and I let out a groan as my cock throbs to be inside her. Tempest puts her hands on each of my shoulders to balance as she climbs over me. At this angle, I have to remove my fingers from her. She rocks her wet pussy lips over the tip of my aching cock before sliding down and taking me deep inside her. Instantly, I grip her hips to hold her still so I don't blow my load. Fucking got me, Tempest. You got me. She rolls her hips, and I am lost to her. She is in charge, and I have to let go because all I see are sparks of colors in my mind as she works us both up. Her lips crash to mine. There is no pace, no rhythm as we fuck, hard, fast, slow, soft, and everything in between, before we finally find ourselves so lost in each other we come together, and we do it hard.
Chapter 14 Things I would tell my 15-year-old self now that I'm grown. Don't be afraid to follow your dreams, Jezzy. Tempest. There are so many things I need to process. Gentry and I are in a real relationship. I feel like a silly teenage girl saying, I have a boyfriend, I have a boyfriend. It's almost stupid the level of giddiness I feel. When did I get so lost in him? Was it the first time he kissed me when they came here to help Cameron Lynn get settled? Was it when the Devil's Do MC took my cousin's back and made Tamlin's life full? He was part of it. I don't know when it happened, but it did. I fell. I fell hard and fast for a biker. He is everything I never knew I wanted and needed. Part of me wants to freak out and finish packing my suitcases. The other part of me wants to slide them off the bed and then slide myself back over Godzilla for another orgasm or two. I'm in danger. My daughter is in danger. And yet I feel safe. You're thinking awfully hard, beautiful, Gentry says, with his penis still inside me. Calling him Gentry, it's nice. It makes me feel special. Like it's our thing and no one else has it. Gently, he lifts me off of him, and I immediately feel the loss of his body connected to mine. He slides me up on the bed to rest my head on the pillows, pushing the one suitcase I had on the bed off. I relax, knowing he's only going to the bathroom to get a washcloth and clean us both up. We had the talk after the third time we hooked up when the condom broke. He gets tested regularly, and I am the first girl he ever stopped using condoms with since I have an IUD to prevent pregnancy. Gentry is my only lover in the last few years, so I checked out with a clean bill of health for STDs without a problem. Since that moment, we stopped using them. It's nice. Probably too nice because I never want anything between us again. I know Stephanie used to ask Sean to wear a condom because she felt gross when he would come inside her. Never having unprotected sex before, I didn't know what to think when Gentry and I first stopped using them. Now, though, I find it erotic and a huge turn-on to have his seed so deep inside me. Feeling that flood of his juice mixing with mine and knowing I brought him over the edge, it's empowering. After we clean up and I put on pajamas, Gentry helps me put the suitcases back. He goes outside to get his duffel bag from his bike while I make some bedtime tea to unwind. Erica comes out after her shower. Mom, I really like him. I know he's new to us, but I am glad you have someone. I don't want you to be lonely trying to protect me. We say our goodnights, and I fall asleep with Gentry in bed beside me. The man is all about living the truth. He has claimed us, and my bed is now our bed. While to outsiders this may seem fast, I think it just fits. Honestly, with my life as busy as it is, I can't see where finding time to really date someone and be wooed would actually work. Gentry may not have long conversations, but his actions speak and they tell me he's here for me and my daughter. I snuggle close to him rather than climb out of bed.
You got me messed up, Tempest,
he rumbles under me. How's that? I never sleep this late. I look at the clock and see it's almost 6 in the morning. When do you get up?
0400 to work out.
I trace his 8-pack abs. I think you can miss a workout and be fine, babe.
I work out so I don't feel the demons.
And that is Gentry. He keeps it real. Want to talk about them?
I was on the mission with Callahan that fucked him in the head.
Gentry speaks, but the words are lost for a moment while I process that he was in the SEALs with Sean. What are the chances? I know he said he might know him, but to know he not only knew him, he served with him, makes me tense.
Tempest, he was shot by a kid. He wasn't prepared for that. I told you I've done fucked up shit, things that I am certain to burn in hell for. If I were a stronger man, I'd walk away and not tie you down with someone tainted like me. I just can't let you go, though.
All thoughts of Sean leave me as my heart hurts for the man I care so deeply for and the things he has endured. I can only imagine the things you've seen. The things you've done, Gentry. I can tell you, I don't want you to let me go. You fill this part of me that's about me and not everyone else. You see me inside and don't get intimidated. You are all things good, Gentry. Even if you can't see it because of the shadows in your past. He sighs.
Want you to know. If I'm not on your tail, I'll have a brother on your 6. I told you I wouldn't risk your safety. I won't. So while I sort out confronting Callahan and making him back off, I will have someone watching you and Erica when she's not in school.
I nod, not sure what to say, but finding comfort in his protection. You take care of your own. I won't fight it.
Damn, baby, making me fall deeper and deeper every minute.
I press my lips to his. Good. I plan to keep it up. I smile, getting up from the bed to start my day. After a shower, I go to the kitchen where Gentry has a hot cup of coffee waiting for me and an omelet sitting in front of Erica while he continues with another one on the stove. We have this comfortable morning together. I leave for work while Erica asks Gentry to take her to school on his motorcycle, to which I agree. If he's going to be in my life, he will be in hers. They need their own bond. The morning is a blur of paperwork and paying bills. At lunchtime, I feel the urge to do something I haven't done in a while, so I make the drive. For a moment, in the bliss of what's happening with Gentry, I allow myself to forget about Sean and the threat he poses. I also forget that I should let Gentry know where I'm going, so he can let whoever is on watch for me can be aware. I just take this moment to be me. The air is comfortable. There is a gentle breeze that makes me feel like Stephanie is wrapping me in her embrace somehow. Or maybe it's wishful thinking. I go to the bench marked only with a single butterfly. I couldn't put her name on it for fear he would find where we settled. When I left the Carolinas to make my life in Tennessee, I wasn't smart. With Sean locked up and being told their baby died, I set up everything in my own name. While little can be found on Erica, if someone dug into Haven's Harbor or her school, they would figure it out. I should have made myself a new identity. Then again, I thought he would be convicted of murder and be behind bars for life. How wrong I was. In the midst of everything, I knew I couldn't go home for Stephanie's memorial. So I paid for a bench at the cemetery here and had a butterfly put on it in her memory. This is where I go to connect to her. I sit. For a long time, I say nothing. Then I pour out my heart about Erica and the challenges and Gentry wondering if I'm doing the right thing. Lost in my emotions, I don't pay attention. A shadow covers my space before I feel the cold metal of a blade against my neck. I tense, holding my breath. Where is my kid? I feel the blade slide, slicing my neck. Feel it, Tempest. You feel the power. I'll gut you if you don't talk. The cut, it's not deep, but it's to make me aware. Looking ahead of me, I see a man in jeans and a leather vest rushing over. The club, Deacon's brothers, one of them followed me. Thank God for the Devil's Due MC. It gives me strength and courage because I know they will save me and keep Erica safe. You behave, Tempest, and you can live long enough to say goodbye to my kid, he mutters, pulling the knife from my neck and moving to sit beside me. The man comes in view, and it's Trapper. He walks right to me and takes me by the hands, lifting me from the bench while I'm frozen in terror. It all happens so fast. Trapper is here, holding me. I find relief. His lips hit mine like I'm not bleeding and there isn't a crazy man behind us. Releasing me, he slaps my ass, putting his body between Sean's and mine.
Hey, baby, you didn't have to hide your friend. You know I'm always down with a threesome.
Trapper spouts off loudly and with such animation it seems believable.
I'll fuck this man in the ass hard for you. I know how you like to watch me give it good. Makes you all wet. I'll make him feel me in his throat.
He extends his hand to Sean as if to shake it.
Name's Trapper. Don't know if my Tempest here told ya. We're swingers. She's a kinky broad that can suck better than a Hoover vacuum, and like Dyson, she doesn't need her filter changed.
He tosses his head back laughing and taking his hand away before Sean can actually shake his hand.
You got a death wish, fucker?
Sean replies, pulling a gun from his back. Trapper stills in front of me, making sure he is between me and the possible bullet.
Yeah, I do. You ready to make my dreams come true?
Sean stands towering over Trapper and me.
What the fuck kind of game you playing, man?
Trapper steps forward, closer to the gun.
Who said I'm playing? You got balls of steel to fuck with a broad. Fuck with a man. Fuck a man is even better.
Trapper unbuttons and unzips his jeans, pulling out his cock.
I'll show you, buddy.
He strokes himself just enough to get Sean's attention on him. In the blink of an eye, Trapper yanks the gun from Sean and fires. One bullet to the head. Sean goes down. I scream. Sean hits the ground with a thud. His eyes still open. Lifeless. Trapper drops the gun and tucks his junk away like he didn't just kill a man. He takes my hand in his to guide me away. Stunned, I remain in place.
Shock's gonna set in, Tempest, he says as he walks, pulling me forward at a fast clip to the parking lot. Boys are coming. Gonna make this shit go away. You need a blanket and some water. Your neck will heal, but gotta keep the wound clean, sweet. Infections from knife wounds are the worst. I should know. I was stabbed 21 times.
He continues to ramble on without a care. Sean is dead. Trapper killed him to save me. Sean was going to kill me and get to Erica. I almost lost her. I almost lost everything.
I wanted that fucker to shoot me. But if he did, then he would have got you next. So once again, the Reaper wins and gets another soul that's not mine. I swear the fucker has a hard-on for keeping me alive. I want to meet the devil himself, and yet every time I find a way to open the doorway to hell, they stamp me rejected and keep me here for their entertainment. The afterlife is a clever bitch like that.
Trapper, you need therapy, I whispered to him honestly. I want to thank him for saving me, but I am distracted as Tamlin practically jumps from Judge's bike and rushes to me. While my cousin squeezes me tight, I can't think about the dead man behind us or the cut on my neck. My only thought is Erica. We need to check on Erica, I tell her, pulling away. Deacon's got her, Tamlin explains, and I raise my eyebrow. He traced Sean's alias, Marvin Dean, and hacked his phone. I intercepted a text that said he's found her, that he was sending someone who he had paid for information, and he was firing them, basically. Worried for Erica's safety since none of us can be at school with her, Deacon took off to get her, Tamlin explains. Trapper was your watchdog today, so we knew you were okay. I met Deacon at school so I could sign Erica out. He took her to a safe house he set up. Trapper was supposed to bring you when you finished here. Immediately, I relax, which is a mistake because I feel like I might pass out as the shock hits. The only thing I can do is find relief knowing Gentry, Deacon Hawkins, made my daughter safe before everything else, which is exactly what I would want. He put her before everything and everyone, which is the man we need in our lives. This is the moment. I fall even harder and faster in love with the man on a motorcycle who rode into our lives on a whim. I would marry him right now without hesitation. That's how deep I am in. I can only pray he never leaves because no one will understand Erica and me like he does.
Chapter 15. Gentry. Tell me you got her safe. I answer the phone when the screen says Judge calling. Yeah, he answers, and I catch my breath. Thank fuck. As soon as I got into the fucker's phone and saw he found them, I took off with Erica on my mind. Yes, I made provisions for Tempest's safety, but Erica was my priority. Collector called in a marker and got us a place 40 minutes outside of town to hide out until we can secure Callahan, or Dean, whatever he wants to go by. She okay? Well, I'm gonna give it to you straight. The she mentioned in the text, it wasn't Erica. Marvin Dean or Sean Callahan, whichever you want to call him. He found Tempest. He followed her to the memorial bench she has for Stephanie. Fuck! I yell and punch the brick exterior of the house. I stepped outside so I wouldn't scare Erica. She has all sorts of questions, but I told her I couldn't answer them until her mom arrived. How bad did I mess this up? She's good, brother. Trapper was here, took the piece of shit out with his own gun. He cut her, but not deep, just a flesh wound. We're headed to you now. My phone beeps, and it's Tempest. I don't say another word to Judge and click over. Beautiful, I answer, and hate that we're only connected by a phone.
Gentry, is Erica safe?
Yes, baby. She's with me. I got her first. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry he got to you. I feel the tears build. I'm a fucking man. But I can't stop them as they fall because I failed my woman. I told her I would protect her and I fucked it up.
No. You did what I would want. Erica always comes first, Gentry. I wouldn't be okay with her being with anyone else.
I hear her sob and it kills me. I have been to war and nothing has broken me more than the helpless feeling I have right now.
We're on our way there. Tamlin is driving my car.
I haven't told Erica anything yet. It's your call, Tempest.
If there is one thing I admire most about you, Gentry Deacon Hawkins, it's your honesty, even if it hurts. We'll tell her the truth.
Feeling unsteady, I plant myself on the front step on the porch. Okay, Tempest. I take your lead with her. God, I'm so sorry. I can't believe he got to you.
That's not on you. Please, Gentry, don't put that on you.
We end the call because reception becomes a challenge. The door to the house behind me opens and Erica comes out. She plops down on the step beside me.
We're in danger, aren't we?
Your mom will explain when she gets here, I say, trying to sort my own emotions. Erica reaches over and takes my large hand in her small one.
Seen a lot of things with what my mom has built at the shelter, Deacon. I'm asking you, not her. You brought me here because we're in danger, yes or no? This isn't the kind of place that screams family vacation and bonding.
Yeah, there is a risk factor.
Does it have to do with my dad?
I don't reply.
I know, Deacon. I didn't know before, but I know now. I don't know why, but for the first time in my life, I Googled my mother. I guess I just took everyone's word, or maybe deep inside I knew subconsciously I couldn't handle the truth. Either way, I put the internet to use for me. Mom always told me not to depend on a man. So, no offense, but I didn't want to depend on you to give me the information I was looking for.
Part of me wants to laugh at her frankness, and the other part wants to tell her to hold on to that attitude because men can fail like I did today. You know, media and internet, well, they don't always get the story right.
He went to jail. Regardless of the details, my biological mom died because of him.
I don't confirm the statement, but again, I won't deny it because I won't lie to the young woman in front of me. Erica, you're a bright, strong, and amazing young woman. Don't let anything hold you back, including who your parents are.
Our deal is off, in case you were wondering.
Yeah? Why's that? I ask, but find myself relieved that I don't have to lay it all at her feet.
I'm going to keep my end of it up. I won't give my mom a hard time and no more running away. You, though, you're off the hook. My biological mom did what she felt she had to. I feel it in my bones. Knowing about my dad now, there were reasons my mom, Tempest, didn't tell me about him. She had her reasons, and I shouldn't have pushed.
That's a very mature thing to do and attitude to have. She rocks a little beside me.
Yeah, I'm growing up.
She laughs. We sit together, with her holding my hand, silently waiting for Tempest to arrive. I'm thankful she doesn't push the questions. I won't lie to her, but I won't cross a line with Tempest after everything she's given to this girl. My mind plays war inside. I failed, Tempest. I failed my team. If I hadn't been so far back, I would have been able to help them while they were under fire. The little voice in the back of my mind reminds me I would have been dead too, but still, maybe I should have. How many more people will I fail before I'm taken from this life? Can I hold it all together to give these two women the future they deserve?
Chapter 16. Things I would tell my 15-year-old self now that I'm grown. People that you think are important and whose opinion you value right now aren't going to matter in 5 years. Danny. Tempest. 3 days after the incident at the cemetery, I am a mess. The Devil's Due MC really swooped in and made things happen with Sean's body, so I didn't have to answer questions, and Trapper didn't face any trouble. Erica and I talked. She knows the truth about her dad and seems at peace with the life we have together. Things should be good. They aren't. Gentry, Deacon Hawkins, left. He asked me to trust him to come back. He told me he just had a few things to square away out of town and he would return. He said we were safe. The entire club would be here for us until he got back. After everything, he left. He won't answer my calls.
only Erica's, and I am pissed. Tamlin says that she's decided to make roots here. Judge agreed, so they are fixing up the place they kept Erica at and making that their home. A quick cash offer had them closing the deal in 7 days. It's nice to know they are staying. They are close enough if I need something, they can come, and far enough from everything, they can have the quiet life they have both always wanted. Cameron Lynn and her son Brennan are making plans to relocate to Alabama soon. Hadley and Cameron are so close, now that Hadley and X have decided to settle down. Cameron wants to build a life closer to her friend. The Devil's Due MC has ridden into my town plenty of times, but when the others pulled away this morning, they did so with the intention of having life in Leed, Alabama, where Sunny has a tattoo shop, leaving Tamlin and Judge with me. Looks like the nomads are going to try to tame their gypsy souls. As for Gentry, who knows about him? I thought he would stay here with me. Tamlin thought he would stay here with me. We thought he would be back before the others left. Instead, he's gone. And I have to wonder if he's going to come back. I have to remember life moves on. I twirl the teabag in my mug when Erica rushes out of her room straight to me. She's happy, something she hasn't been in a while. Gentry's coming home. What? I ask, dropping the teabag. Gentry's on his way home. When I talked to him yesterday, he said it would be tomorrow, but just now, he said he would be here in an hour. Anger floods me. He can't answer my fucking calls, but he talks to her, and then thinks he's just gonna come home because he decided to. Oh no, not happening. When I see him, I swear I'm gonna kick him in the nuts. Can I stay up to say hi? How can I deny her? I nod my head. A quick hello, then to bed, young lady. Go ahead and take your shower so you're ready for bed when he gets here. She takes off like everything is perfect, while I want to scream. Since she will be in the shower a bit, I step out onto my front porch and wait. And wait. I continue to wait so that I can swiftly kick him in the nuts, then let him see Erica, and possibly kick him in the nuts again. After a bit, I hear the sound of a motorcycle getting closer. When Gentry pulls to a stop in my driveway, I don't get up. What I want to do is go slap him and tell him to hit the road. I can't, though. Because of Erica. He approaches, and I see the fatigue in his features. Standing, I look him in the eyes. Look, we need to get some things straight. You don't get to come in and out. You want to be the rambler, the gypsy, the nomad? Go on. I got a kid, though. I can't live that life with you. I also won't be second to the road. I've been through hell, and you just left. I'm sorry. He says remorsefully. I told you I had to go get something. I asked you to trust me. I needed to sort myself and then pick something up. I'm done with the road. I'm done with everything that doesn't have to do with you and Erica. I failed you once. It won't happen again. Where have you been? It's been 3 days. I went to therapy. I perch my hands on my hips, stunned. Say what? I have nightmares from my last mission. I didn't want to do anything that would make you or Erica think of Sean. That final mission fucked me up. What Callahan got fucked from his mission. Everyone died but me. I dream about it. Sometimes I would wake up not in the bed and not sure what I did. I won't put you or Erica in danger. I soften. Gentry, I can help you through that. Remember, I'm not alone. That means you aren't alone either. I got hypnotized. Then I went to my safety deposit box in Georgia and cleaned it out. I know I should have called or talked to you, but I've been a mess in my head. You needed to focus on yourself and Erica, not my bullshit. I needed to get myself strong enough to be everything you deserve. Before I can reply, Erica rushes out of the front door in her pajamas. Gentry! She hugs him, and he hugs her back, holding her tight. I watch him close his eyes in relief to have her close again. How do we move through this? I can't stay up. Mom said I could say hello, then I gotta crash. Will you make me an omelet for breakfast?
Anything for my women.
He's casual, too casual. It frustrates me. I'll say goodnight to her, lock up, then we need to talk in my bedroom. He follows me in. I change into my oversized t-shirt I wear to sleep in, and then look at him. I don't know whether to kiss you or kick you.
I prefer the kiss.
I'm sorry, Tempest. I had to clear my past up so I can be rock solid for you and our future. It's how I am. I need to be ever steady, solid. And I wasn't. I know you faced shit. I know I fucked up and failed you. I had to get my head right so I don't drag you down a dark road with me. I can help you and Erica work through everything from the situation with Callahan now without holding you back because of my past. I shouldn't have left you, but I knew Tamlin would be here for your emotions and the boys to keep you safe until I could make sure I was 100% safe for you and Erica. I can't post any danger to you. Either of you. Ever. Unable to take one more second of fighting with him, I reach up and pull his face to me. You told me to understand you were gonna fuck up. You didn't fuck up until you left. You don't bail on me when I got a kid. I failed, he whispers against my lips. The fuck you did, Gentry. You put your brother on watch. If Trapper hadn't been there, then I would be dead, and Erica... I can't even say the words. Trapper saved me because of you. How can you think you put me in danger? Or failed me? I should have been the one to kill Callahan. Take your ego and shove it, sailor. You didn't get the kill. I get the need for vengeance. I get the need to control it, but... Damn it, Gentry, his blood need not be on your hands.
How can you say that?
He asks, and I hate that I can feel his pain. He is broken over what happened. You want to be the one that tells Erica you killed her dad. She understands Sean was a bad man, but in her teenage mind, you being the man behind the fatal shot could turn into all sorts of things. I watched him die. It shook me for a minute. Then you know what? I felt relief. For the first time in years, I felt safe. I see the conflict in his eyes. She loves you, Gentry. I love you. We don't need a divide between us when we're supposed to be a family.
You still want to have a family with me?
I nod my head, meaning it.
You love me?
Yeah, Gentry, I love you. I never believed I would have anything in life more satisfying than knowing I help save women's lives. But you, having you in my life, it fills this part of me I didn't even know I was missing. Having you disappear and take it from me, that's a loss I don't ever want to feel again.
Marry me?
I pull my head back in shock. What?
Can't fucking breathe without you. Can't sleep without you, and I can't fail you again. I want to do shit right. Tempest, marry me?
Tears threaten to fall, and I can't seem to make the words work. So instead, I nod. His lips press to mine, and I let go. For the first time since Sean Callahan's blood covered my body, I let go. My safe place to fall is in Gentry's arms, and I'm ready to fall all the way, knowing he'll always catch me. Backing us up to my bed, I fall back as I pull him down over me. I wrap my legs around him so I can feel his jeans rub against my panties as my nightshirt bunches up around my waist. Groaning, he kisses me while pushing the scrap of fabric to the side. Teasing my lips, he traces my edges. Reaching between us, I cup his cock and squeeze. Godzilla is happy to be home, I whisper, biting his bottom lip. Gentry tugs hard on the small side threads, ripping them off. Rubbing a finger between my folds, I know I'm drenched and ready for more. With my hands between us, I undo his jeans, taking his beast and stroking him. Take me, Gentry. Now. I rock against him. Without another word, he shifts to remove his jeans before sinking deep inside me. My whole body trembles at the contact, causing me to cry out in satisfaction. Gentry looks me in the eyes as he slides out and back in.
Fucking broke the mold when they made you baby. I love you, Tempest. And I'm sorry I left. I'm sorry the fucker got to you.
You home now for good? I ask, panting as he slowly pulls out and slides back in again.
Couldn't make me leave, even if you wanted me to.
His eyes. The man he is and has been. I let myself believe. Hope. And hold on to this moment and his words. I love you, Gentry. And you love me. The rest? We'll make it work. Finally settling in with the reassurance he needed from me, Gentry picks up the pace. We get lost in each other as he pounds deliciously into me with no restraint. My head falls back in pure ecstasy.
Harder, I beg. I need Godzilla to take me harder.
No longer able to hold back, Gentry's lips crush to mine. My nails dig harshly into his shoulders, even through his shirt. He continues to pull almost completely out before sliding deep back inside me. Thrust after thrust, he's taking everything I'm giving and demanding more. The buildup in both of our bodies is climbing higher and higher than anything I've ever felt before. My inner walls squeeze his cock tightly. He hits the spot, and I combust. My body shakes so hard, I'm unable to hold on to him anymore. Wrapping one arm under my ass, his other holds him over me as my pussy milks his dick in my aftershocks. He tightens over me, his own release closing in. You're everything. You've taught me to live for more than a promise I made my friend a long time ago, I whisper, just as the heat hits inside me as he reaches his climax. Leaning over the bed, he pulls his duffel bag to him without separating our bodies. Reaching in, he retrieves a box and hands it to me.
I went to my safe deposit box to get you this. My parents were never married. But my father once bought my mother this pearl ring. I know it's not a diamond, and if you want a diamond, I'll get you one. But this is a piece of my roots that I hope you accept as we tie both our roots together and build this life for us and for Erica.
I look at it and my heart swells. You left to go pick up a ring to propose to me? He nods. Our love story is crazy. No one will ever believe we went from hookups to overcoming hang-ups all so we can raise a teenage daughter together that biologically isn't ours. Gentry smiles at me.
Love is love. And I love you, and I love Erica. There is no other definition needed or explanation. Our family is built on love and loyalty.
That it is. Love and loyalty will get us through anything. Chapter 17. Things I would tell my 15-year-old self now that I'm grown. Never stop believing in happily ever after. Fairy tales and Prince Charming. He just might wear biker boots and ride a Harley. It will be the best forever you almost missed if you let it pass you by. Tempest to Erica. Tempest.
Mom, why are you giving me these now?
Erica, I was wrong about some things. Remember when you asked me about fairy tales and I told you it was just some made-up thing that teach girls to depend on a man swooping in to save the day?
Yes. You also told me never to be the damsel in distress, but rather the female who is fearless.
Well, those are good points, but I think there is more. So, I'm giving you the journals so we have time to share with each other everyday lessons for each other. Erica lifts the box of books that are all handwritten letters from me to her, and some I wrote to Stephanie as I struggled. I never wanted to keep the truth from Erica about her mom. I wanted to honor the woman who gave her life. I've made mistakes. I'm not too proud to say it.
Mom, what lesson am I supposed to teach you?
I hug my daughter and hold her close. Erica Haven Adams, you teach me every day. You've taught me patience, You've taught me unconditional love, forgiveness, kindness. You've taught me the difference between listening and really hearing someone's words. You've taught me to be the example. You've taught me to be strong. Erica hugs me back tight. You've taught me, she whispers. Family isn't blood. You've taught me love endures. You've taught me to love harder, forgive easier, and believe in myself. You've taught me to be strong, to be fearless, and to be myself. You've been my constant. As Deacon says, you're my ever steady. I'm a lucky lady to have you as my daughter. I'm the lucky one, Erica says back. In a world where every bad thing seems to build a deficit against someone's character, you have always had my back. I've never felt like I was lacking something. Gentry comes into the kitchen joining us.
You know what we say. Eric and I separate to look at him. What do you say?
The devil always calls for his due. Shit's been hard, but we're at peace. Our debt is paid in full. Our future is nothing but endless possibilities.
Erica and I look at each other, then back to Gentry. In unison we say, with family and love, there is nothing to stand in our way. One day at a time, the love and life we are building together grow stronger. I look forward to next year and the next to see where this journey takes us. Until then, I will take a moment for granted, and I will love this man and my daughter harder. Remember to forgive easier and never let go.
Bottom line. Bonus time. Trapper. We're sorry. The number you have reached is no longer in service. What the fuck, Avery? I yell to no one. The hotel room is empty. Tomorrow, one fucking day away, and Avery would have me home. Rowdy and Michelle left 2 days ago to get the shop ready to reopen. While they look for a house in Leed, Alabama, fucking Sunny gave them free rein to use her house. The house I've had Avery staying in for months. Damn it. Avery. What do I do with Avery? There isn't a single bad thing I can say. Loyalty? Hell, no one has it more than Avery. Since we were punk-ass teens, Avery's had my back. Trust. There is not a single person who I trust more than Avery. When someone knows your every secret, both the good and the bad, but never tells a soul, that's trust. Forgiveness? All the shit I have done over the years, Avery knows every fuck, every betrayal, and forgives me of them all. And I have fucked a lot. Fearless. To see Avery, a stranger wouldn't think much. Knowing Avery, knowing the night I should have died and Avery saved me, Avery faced our tormentor to save my life. I took too long. How many times has Avery told me to come home? How many times has Avery made it clear Avery was not my dirty little secret? How many times have I brushed it off? This is my punishment. My time is up. The devil is calling. And I'm the one with the debt. It's time I paid my due. This concludes Paid in Full by Chelsea Cameron. Narrated by Aiden Snow and Kendall Taylor. Copyright 2017 by Chelsea Cameron. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Chelsea Cameron and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.